is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
McCoy at the 10, at the 5, into the end zone. Touchdown! And a great run. He's in trouble. He is dropped. Kyle Williams dropped it. Oh, baby, what a hit. Tyrod looks. Tyrod on the run. Nobody in front of him. Touchdown! There's T-Mobile.
He gonna come through.
Sammy in the end zone. Got it! Got it! Touchdown! Sammy Watkins, touchdown, Buffalo! McCoy, touch to the right. Outrunning everybody. 10, 5, touchdown! Touchdown! Touchdown, Buffalo!
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts.
Hello there. Good afternoon. Welcome to sunny Orchard Park, New York. Welcome to our One Buffalo studio in the Ed Pro Sports Training Center. It is the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. John Murphy, Donald Jones, I dare you to complain about the weather in Orchard Park today.
Not today. I can't. Not today. It's
That's
a nice
right.
day
we got
out today.
Yeah. No, it's pretty nice here.
It's nice. Yeah. It's a nice day.
70, what do you think? It's going to get close to 80, I think, today, right?
Yeah, I'm loving it.
70 degrees, sunshine, beautiful day in OP. Happy to have you tuned in today, whether it's on the radio, on our flagship in Buffalo, WGR Sports Radio 550, or on TV on the MSG side. The Bills, the players, the coaches, they are out on the field inside New Era Field. That's how nice the weather is today. It is day two of OTAs, organized team activity going on as we speak. And those of you watching on the TV side get a look at just what a nice day it is in the stadium with the Bills players, offense and defense, 90 strong in the player ranks, and all those coaches out on the field going through the OTA practice. You were over there a few minutes ago, Donald, day two. It's business as usual, right? And getting some good work in, it appears, based on what we saw yesterday.
Oh, yeah, it's football practice out now. I mean, you know, these guys are obviously they're still working out and doing their off-season training regimen, but it is football now. Those guys are out there on the field. They're doing either running routes, catching passes. You know, they're doing tackling drills on the dummies, different things like that. I mean, they're into it now because, I mean, you have these rookies and you have guys that are really trying to make this team or become a starter on this team, and you can just see the focus and the passion on these in these guys' eyes. They're trying to get after it.
Yep, they're out there on the field. They will be for another hour or so, and we're going to talk about the Bills. We're kind of into it here as well. Coming up today on the show, coming up at the bottom of this hour, we're going to be joined by Judy Batista, who covers the league for NFL Network and NFL.com, to talk about a variety of topics, most of them dealing with next week's NFL owners meetings. Next week, NFL owners get together. Judy Batista of NFL Network wrote today about a couple of changes that will take place at the spring league meetings. They're going to change the IR rule to allow teams to bring back two players from injured reserve instead of just one. For the last 5 years, there's been the IR, you know, with, what do they call it, designated for return. Mm-hmm. Now there'll be two players. I see no reason why that would not go through or be a good idea. What do you think?
I like it. You know, anytime you can get – because when you have it as just one player, I mean, you're limited, you know, and you might have a couple of guys that go down – and it's like, man, which guy? Now, you can look at it and say, well, you have to make a decision and decide which one you want to bring back over the other one. You know, it makes things more competitive. It makes it a tougher decision on these organizations. But the fact that they have two now, because you do, I mean, ultimately, this game in professional sports, the fans want to see the stars on the field. You know, so if a guy goes down early in the season and then you designate him and then another guy goes down, you know, a couple weeks after that, and he can still be designated, the fans want the stars to be able to come back, especially around playoff times. You know, you want to see the stars in the playoffs, and so I think it's a good thing.
Years ago, and this goes back a while, I think the IR rules allowed for players any unlimited number to come back after like 6 weeks. I'm talking about 25 years ago. Mm-hmm. And the one of the problems that came up, one of the reasons why I think they switched it, Donald, was because they thought that teams were actually stashing players on injured reserve. So you like a player, he's not ready to help, you'll make up an injury, put him on IR, and then 6 weeks later you'll see where you're at and get a chance to bring him back. So it was an effort to prevent stashing of players.
Yeah.
And then it changed to where if you're IR, you're out for the year. And now we seem to be going back the other way, which I don't think anybody, you know, if you really wanted a player, you got to leave him out for 8 weeks now before you can come back.
Right.
I don't think we're at the point yet where teams will actually use the injured reserve list to stash players to, you know, prevent them from, you know, otherwise you got to waive them and expose them to waivers, you might lose them. But it is interesting to me how it's trending back towards that way. It went from, teams are stashing. Let's eliminate any way at all they can come back to. Mm-hmm. Let's give you one option to bring one player back. Now it's apparently going to be two, according to this rule.
And hopefully we don't see this continue to climb every other year, every couple of years. Now it becomes three. You know, I don't think that they should get back to where it was at that point. I do like the fact that when you have these injuries – because I'm a fan, you know, and I want to see the stars play. I want to, you know, it's like you get around certain parts of the season, you want to be able to see the stars actually perform. You want to see the guys who you know can make these plays. I want to see them make plays. Now, yeah, I would, you know, the other guys that are out there, the backups that are forced to step in and be starters, if they can fill the void and become a star in this league, that's a great thing as well, mm-hmm. you know. But I want to see the stars out there, and I think – now you have that opportunity to bring back two different guys. I think it's a good thing.
So that's coming up at 12:30. We'll dive into this with Judy Batista of the NFL Network and NFL.com. Coming up at 1 o'clock, our buddy Bill Barnwell, who writes for ESPN.com. Bill Barnwell has gone through the entire league. He's in the process of going through the entire league and talking about who has had the best off seasons. He has issued grades for off seasons for NFL teams. We're going to focus on his article dealing with the AFC East. He gives the Bills a B for their offseason. Now, you won't catch Donald and I saying publicly that the Bills have won the offseason. That got a certain coach in trouble last year. but it's interesting that Bill Barnwell says the Bills have had a better offseason than the Jets and the Dolphins and pretty much on par with the Patriots. We'll talk with him about that and compare what's going on in the offseason for all of these AFC East teams, at least. So that's coming up at 1 o'clock. Cordy Glenn's scheduled to join us at 2. The Bills' veteran left tackle who's been rehabbing from an injury. Cordy Glenn is scheduled to be with us coming up around 2 o'clock today to talk about his recovery and how these OTAs are going for him. And plus, a lot of your phone calls, a lot of your input as well. We're here for 3 hours to talk it over. The phone line's open at 803-0550. Toll-free from outside Buffalo, 1-888-550-2550. Bill Barnwell's article got us thinking about the Bills' offseason. And it's been, you know, there's a lot going on in this Buffalo Bills offseason this year. Mm-hmm. We want to hear from you. What's been the best offseason move the Bills have made since the season ended, back around New Year's? There's been a lot going on. But what was, in your mind, if you can rank them or if you can prioritize and tell us what is the best offseason move for the Bills, give us a call, 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. That's our Twitter poll. What has been the best offseason move for the Bills? And think about it. Think about what's going on. Obviously, they had to restructure the football department, and they hired Sean McDermott. They hired Brandon Bean. They've added an entire coaching staff and are beginning to add members of the personnel department. Maybe that's at the top of your list. Is it the restructure of Tyrod Taylor's contract? Tyrod's going to be back. He's going to be the starter this year. That was an issue going back to, if you think about the way last season ended, Tyrod not even playing in week 17. Maybe that was, in your mind, the best move the Bills made this offseason, keeping Tyrod around for another year. Not just that, but giving him a contract that allows them to have options when this season is over. Maybe it's what went on draft day, and in particular, the fact that they moved down to get an extra 2018 first-rounder. They currently have two first-round picks in their pocket for 2018. Maybe you believe that is the best offseason move. Maybe you got something else in mind. Let us know. Give us a call, 803-0550, or toll-free 1-888-550-2550. The offseason continues. We're in OTAs. There's about a month, maybe a month and a half left. Well, more like a month, really, of spring workouts, and then they'll be off for a month, and then they come back for training camp. So we can take a look at the offseason so far, going back to the first of the year. What's been the best offseason move for the Bills so far? That's our Twitter poll, and it is up right now on Twitter. What has been the best offseason move for the Bills? And it's a dead heat right now between a couple of things. Acquiring that extra first-rounder next year, 45% of you say that has been the best offseason move for the Bills. 45% say the acquisition of Coach Sean McDermott and General Manager Brandon Bean. That has been the best offseason move for the Bills. 9% say the restructuring of Tyrod Taylor's contract, and 1%, just 1%, say something else. Let us know what you think. Give us a call at 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550, or via Twitter at John Murphy Show. What is the best offseason move for the Buffalo Bills so far? You can reach out to us on Twitter. Will Stoll says the Tyrod restructure was the worst offseason move for the Bills.
Wow.
Okay, I get it. You don't like Tyrod, but I don't know how that could I mean, look, they have flexibility after this year. He clearly is the best, I think, the best option to play quarterback this year. I don't see how restructuring his contract, bringing him, putting him back on the roster, and having all kinds of options open for you at the end of the season with Tyrod, I don't see how that would be a bad move at all. Certainly not the worst move. I disagree with you, Will Stoll, on Twitter.
I mean, the crazy thing was I was going to say that was the best move.
You really? Know,
I was going to say that's
Go
the best move.
It.
Just be, well, that is the best move.
Okay.
just because you look at the way they structured the contract. They brought him back, which, you know, we talked about it before they did the entire contract. If they were to decide to let him walk, I think they would have been saying we're in a full rebuild mode, you
yeah.
know, and so to restructure that contract at least so that he's locked in for this year, you know, it lets him or it lets the fan base know that they do want to try to win this year and try to make it into the playoffs, but at the same time, it gives them that flexibility if he's not good this year to get out of that contract. Now, it also gives them flexibility to say, okay, he did good this year, even if the team makes the playoffs or not. If he does good or he shows some signs of improvement, they could even still draft a quarterback in next year's draft and early in the draft. They could still do that. Then Tyrod Taylor can still be the guy here right now. Like, mm-hmm. You might not want that guy to step in right away. Tyrod Taylor could still be your quarterback and while that guy continues to grow, you know, and we've talked about it. You can win games with Tyrod Taylor as your quarterback. There was nobody else out there on the market. In free agency, there were no good quarterbacks in free agency, and Tyrod Taylor is better than all of the quarterbacks that came out in the draft at yeah. this point in his career, you know, so it made sense to do the contract the way they did it.
Best offseason move for the Bills so far. A couple of other responses on Twitter. Maxwell Fry says, the drafting of Zay Jones. He is a stud, led the nation in receptions. He had 400 in his collegiate career. We all love Zay Jones, and it's a good move, I think, to get him in the second round. The best? Maybe. We'll find out. Sebastian Habermel, all of the above? Okay. GoPens tweets in, I honestly cannot pick between the three. All of them are going to be crucial moving forward. Chad Edwards tweets in, it remains to be seen, but the coaching staff and rebuilt front office looks to be promising. McDermott and Bean are linked, and that's a plus. Bob Timchak tweets in, I think the coach and GM hires are the real thing. No more false hopes. I think we're headed in the right direction for years to come. Bill H. tweets in, firing Whaley is the best offseason mm-hmm. move. Nick Fuego says, getting Steve. nice look on your face.
Yeah.
Nick Fuego, getting Steven Hauschka should be up there. Not the top move, just up there. So, yeah, people can – I think that's debatable. Clearly, the Twitter poll shows that there's a couple of different ways to look at it. We want to hear from you. The best offseason move the Bills have made since the season ended, last season ended. 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. I got to go with the restructured football department with the new head coach and his staff mm-hmm. and with the new general manager, Brandon Bean, coming in. For this reason, and I love the Tyrod restructuring. I love the trade down to get an extra first rounder. There's a lot of other good things that have gone on here in this offseason. But the hiring of McDermott and Bean, I think, has long-term implications. Mm-hmm. And they absolutely have to stay with these two, this group, for a long time, like at least 5 years. And I think it will reap benefits. But the fact that these two appear to have the right stuff to take over these jobs, certainly have a good working relationship that dates back several years, and that if they get the chance to work together for a good long time, I think it could bode good things, not just in 2017, which I would argue the Tyrod Taylor deal is good for 2017, but down the road. I think, to me, that's the best offseason move for the team.
Now, I think that is a very good offseason move for the team. And like you said, with the relationship that these two have, even the guys that they've already hired, you know, underneath Brandon Bean and Joe Shane and Brian Gaines, you know, Shane and Gain, I think, you know, those are great moves. For me, I just want to wait until the season comes around, you know, wait mm-hmm. and see how he handles the season, how they handle, you know, the offseason together next year, you know. So for me, it is a long-term thing, and hopefully they stick with these guys for a long time, you know, talking more than 5 years, you know. But for me, I want to wait and see how it plays out with these guys before I say, you know what, that was the best move.
Okay, let us know what you think. 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Start with a call from Oshawa, Ontario, JD. Hello, JD, welcome to the program.
Hey,
how are you?
I'm good. I think everything's been amazing, but I really like the trading down in the draft, getting that extra draft pick for next year, it just really shows me a real shift in the thinking of the organization. And I think, like you said, like we need to set it up for like the 5-year plan. And I was really impressed with that when it happened at the draft. They didn't go after the candy right away, and they're going to look for the quarterback next year, hopefully. But I really liked that thinking, and I was really happy with pretty much everything they did. But that really stuck out to me.
Okay. Yeah. You know, for good reason. I think it does indicate that there's a longer-term, longer view, anyway, in place here, no matter whose vision that is. Obviously, Brandon Bean wasn't around when that deal was made, but certainly Sean McDermott had a lot to say about trading down, getting the extra first-rounder. And I do like that. It's kind of like, we're addressing some of our needs. They got a good corner in the first round, but there's also an eye on the future and an eye on the quarterback talent in next year's draft.
Yeah, it can definitely be an eye on the quarterback talent. Now, you know, we have to see how that plays out with the quarterbacks in next year's draft.
Yeah,
because everybody right now, I was reading something.
Bucky Brooks, NFL.
Yeah. And he was saying, hold on, let's put a halt to, you know, all of the hype on these quarterbacks in next year's draft. And he basically, you know, had some pros and some cons about those guys in next year's draft. And, yeah, they all sound like they can be good quarterbacks, but they have their flaws as well, you know. So we'll see how that plays out with those guys and if they end up deciding to draft one in next year's draft. But, yeah, having two first-round picks, I mean, you have flexibility to do so many different things with those two first-round picks. You can sit there and pick with whatever picks that you get. You can trade away one of those picks and add more picks in the draft. You can, you know, trade down and try to get a quarterback. I mean, you can do whatever you want to do.
It's a lot of good flexibility there. Give us your thoughts. Best move the Bills have made in the offseason since the first of the year. Ryan calling from Lockport. Hello, Ryan. Welcome. You're on the air.
How you doing, Murph?
Good.
You know, I guess what I am calling about is to tell you this reminds me an awful lot of when Greg Williams hit the ground. Right off the plane, he alienated the media. He came in talking about how the defenses he had coached were better than the defenses that we had here in Buffalo, which was not true. And he was touted as a genius. And I'm feeling this group that's come in here is behaving and acting the same way. I just don't believe it. George Foreman once said, everybody's got a plan until they get hit. Let's wait and see when the game starts. I'd like your comments on that.
Are you still there, Ryan? Did you go, Ryan?
I think he hung up.
Gone? I don't remember Greg Williams alienating the media, I think he said, when he first got off the plane. I don't remember that. And certainly I don't think this group, I don't think Sean McDermott has done that. Did George Foreman say that? Everybody's got a plan until they get hit in the face?
Was that George Foreman that said that?
He said that, but did he?
I don't remember.
Now we got to look that up.
We got to look this
up. No, I mean, I was around. To answer your question, I guess, Ryan, I remember Greg Williams' arrival. I'm thinking of similarities. I guess one similarity would be that, you know, when Greg Williams came in, there was an awful lot of talk about instilling discipline and structure and order to a team that seemingly had been not that well disciplined under Wade Phillips. I never bought into the narrative that Wade Phillips didn't
have. Mike Tyson.
Mike Tyson said that. Yeah, it wasn't George Foreman. Thank you. It's a great quote.
It is
a
great quote.
I just said that to
you the other day.
What were we talking about?
I don't remember.
I said off the air, I said, now, you know, the old Mike Tyson quote, everybody's got a plan until they get hit in the face. Right? It's the greatest.
You did say that in the office.
Yeah. At any rate, I'm trying to think of similarities. I don't know. I guess if you think that, and you're well within your rights to think that Sean McDermott is a change in terms of order and structure and discipline in terms of holding players accountable. Yeah, it's different than Rex Ryan.
Mm-hmm.
I don't recall Greg Williams alienating the media, and certainly I don't think Sean McDermott has done that. But let me say this too, Ryan: your skepticism about Sean McDermott, your wait and see attitude, I get it.
Yeah.
I'm a little bit like that myself. I am. He hasn't coached a game in
right.
the NFL.
Exactly.
He has not coached a game, never been a head coach. So I want to, you know, and he knows this more than you, Ryan, on Lockport, or me here in Orchard Park know. It is a production-based business. He needs to win. It doesn't matter, you know, what's going on here, what he says, really. It doesn't matter. I mean, it matters who they're bringing in, but those players have to produce. And he is following his template. He's following what the type of player he wants to bring in here, as he should, but they got to win.
Right.
So if you're skeptical about that because a guy hasn't done it, I understand that. I have a little bit of skepticism of my own. You know, okay, this has all been good so far. Now win.
Right. I mean, you got to go out there and do it on Sundays. That's the biggest thing. And that's we won't really get that answer until September, until, you know, we get later into the season. How is the team doing later in the season? Because we know there have been years where we'll start off hot here and then it just dies off later in the season. So we'll see how he does once he gets to the season. But I also don't remember him saying anything bad. I mean, now Greg Williams might have said, you know, his defenses that he had before were better than what they had. Sean McDermott hasn't said anything like that.
No.
You know, I mean, he's –
I think Greg did say something like that, yeah.
He did?
I think so, but I don't know if that was alienating the media. I think that's what Ryan said.
I don't – Sean hasn't taken that approach, and I don't see him taking that approach moving forward. He's not the type of guy to say someone else is bad. He just wants to worry about what we do. You know, I just want our guys to be better, you know. So last year's team was last year's team. I don't have anything to do with last year's team. We're trying to make this team, this year's team, better, and the team's moving forward. So
yeah.
I think that's a good thing about Sean right there. And I don't think he's alienated the media or anything like that. He's been good with us here.
I mean, best offseason move for the Bills. What do you think? Paul on the line from Lancaster. Hello, Paul. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Sure.
How do you guys feel Marcell Dareus specifically will respond to Sean McDermott's more disciplined style of coaching? And conversely, how do you think Sean McDermott's going to respond to any players getting disciplined or suspended by the league? I'll hang up and listen to you.
Okay, thanks, Paul. Good questions. All indications are Marcell Dareus has done pretty well, Donald. Mm-hmm. In fact, he's been here a lot. I've seen him here a lot. He's, you know, working hard with everybody out there, it appears. But, again, the proof will be in the pudding. But all indications are he's handling it all right. You know, Marcell I consider him maybe the most important guy on the roster in terms of what they need to have a good season. And so he's going to have to prove it when the season begins, and he's going to have to stay healthy and stay on the field and be a consistent performer. But so far, so good. I don't think I could say anything bad about the way Marcell's responded to Sean McDermott's leadership.
Yeah, I think no news on Marcell is good news. You know, it's like less is more with him. Like, I don't really want to hear anything about Marcell till we get in the season, and that's with him making plays on the field, you know. So I think that's a good thing. He's been quiet, you know. You watch him out there, he looks like he's, you know, he's getting off the ball. I mean, you talked about watching him, you know, with the new line. I mean, they were right in front of our office. So you were watching those guys. He looks like he's quick getting off the ball and things like that. So, you know, he's not dealing with any injuries that we know of. Everything has been good so far. And we'll see how that carries through OTAs and how that carries into training camp. And, you know, one of the biggest signs of players going into a football season is how they handle – and I remember when I was in New England, Coach Belichick would talk about this. The month of – like when these guys are finished with OTAs and that last mandatory minicamp, that from that time to when they have to report to training camp is like the most crucial time for football players going into the season, because guys go back home, it's the summertime, everybody's cooking out, and, you know, you're outside all the time with your family and with your friends. Guys get in trouble around that time of the year. You eat a lot around that time of the year. So it's like, what are you doing during that period? And we'll see how Marcell handles that time of the year. But I think that, you know, Kyle and the new defensive line coach, all of these guys are on Marcell, and even Coach McDermott, these guys are on Marcell about, we need you here. We need you to be Marcell Dareus that we all know you can be, because this team does need him. This defense needs him because he is that big of a difference maker in the defense. He can shut down. He can help to shut down a run. He can also get to the quarterback in the backfield. And that's rare for defensive tackles, somebody his size, to be able to do both of those things. Usually it's like, oh, I'm a run stuffer. No, Marcell is somebody who can do everything, so we need him.
We don't take attendance for these voluntary mini camps, but somebody does. But I can say just by observation, I'm not even talking about this week or even the last few weeks, but it seemed to me Marcell was here for a lot of the just conditioning work, which, you know, has to be the grind of it all, right?
Right.
Conditioning. And you're not doing football. You're running and lifting and doing agility drills.
Right. And guys.
And Marcell seemed to be around, you know, from one. Because, to be honest, I look for him.
Yeah. I mean, there are certain guys that you look for.
You kind of hope. Hey, I hope Marcell. Oh, there he is.
Right. Exactly.
His other question, I don't know how Coach McDermott will handle it if somebody runs afoul of the law or of NFL rules. You know,
We haven't had it yet. Yeah, so we have to see how that plays out. Now, usually when a player is suspended, the coach is at the mercy of the league first to
right.
see what's going to happen.
You do what the league says.
What the league says. And then, you know, once that player comes back in season, especially if he's your star player, he's going to play. And then you really have to handle it in the offseason.
And the one thing, you know, the push to get character players, and McDermott has talked about that. I think they try to do that. That is an effort, I think, to, to make sure that doesn't happen in the future.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't have to worry. Hopefully, you don't have to worry about suspensions, arrests, things like that if you get the right type of player here. That's why you place in a premium on character, I think, in the draft and in free agent acquisitions.
Right. You want good character guys that have come out of college. We know we've all made mistakes in college. I won't speak for you, Murph, but we've all made mistakes in
college. Nothing,
nothing. We've all made mistakes in college, and you want to learn from that stuff, but you want to get good character guys that were able to handle being a star in college and now coming into the league because, quite frankly, you just don't know how guys are going to react once they get here and they're really, you know, in the spotlight and they have money coming in their pockets and they have, you know, different things coming at them, being thrown at them. How can they handle it? So that's something that you really just don't know. So you want to get those good character guys because they, I guess, have a less likely chance to mess up.
You had it off with the
pass. Right, exactly.
You know? What's the best offseason move the Bills have made? It's our Twitter poll. A couple of responses on Twitter. Gregory J. says Micah Hyde, versatile safety in a passing league. Christopher Kajowski says McDermott hire for me, changing the culture and building around veteran talent we already have, wanting to win for guys like Kyle Williams. Johnny Saber tweets in, I like all these moves. Bills have had a really great offseason. No comparison to last season, and Rex's we won the offseason quote. That got a lot of traction, that quote, Donald, last summer. It was before you got here.
Yeah.
I know – I talked to Rex about it after. I know what he was trying to say. He was trying to send a message to his players through the media that we had really good practices, we're set up really well going into training camp. I believe that was the last day of the June mandatory minicamp when Rex said we won the offseason. And like everything else related to Rex Ryan, he is such a lightning rod for criticism and scrutiny. When he said that, people went ballistic. And they won the offseason. Well, look, they lost the opener to Baltimore. So, you know, he makes an easy target. He does it.
He does.
He makes an easy target of himself.
He does.
God bless him.
Exactly, because I don't want that type of target on me.
I just don't want it.
But I think
he does it.
You know,
I don't know.
When I talk to, like, Bart Scott and the guys that played for him down in New York, they loved it because it took a lot of pressure off of those guys in the media. You know, he put it all on himself. And so they were like, we don't have to worry about anything because he really has all of the attention on him. We can just go out there and play.
He was an interesting cat.
He was.
Hey, we're going to break. Judy Batista from NFL Network is coming up next. We're going to resume this discussion. What's the best offseason move the Bills had made? It is our Twitter poll. It is a topic for discussion today, and we want to hear from you. The phone line's open at 803-0550. Toll free 1-888-550-2550. The John Murphy Show continues from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
We've got the show coming to you live from One Bills Drive today. John Murphy, Donald Jones in our One Buffalo studio. NFL owners meet next week in Chicago. And joining us right now on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline, one of the NFL.com reporters. She's a columnist for NFL.com and an NFL Network reporter. She'll be covering the owners' meetings next week in Chicago. Very happy to have Judy Batista on the line with us. Judy, it's John Murphy and Donald Jones. Thanks for spending a few minutes with us here today. We appreciate it.
My pleasure, guys. How are things there?
Things are beautiful. Yeah, 80 degrees and sunny, and the Bills
are
out on the field.
We are
loving
it's great.
It's 90 here in New York. It's amazing.
Yeah, it's great. A little bit of summer in the middle of May. Hey, Judy, at the meetings next week, you've already written about it and talked about it on the network. A couple of tweaks to the rules that we want to talk to you about. One of them deals with the injured reserve list. Can you talk about what's on the table and the likelihood of that being passed this year?
This is a tweak to the existing injured reserve rules, which, you know, in the past allowed one player to come back per season, in season. It used to be, I think it was back before 2012, right, you would put a guy on injured reserve and that was it. He was done for the year. Then in 2012, they amended it and you could bring one guy back. Now they're going to make it that you can bring two guys back in season. And I definitely expect it to pass. I can't imagine why there would be any resistance among teams to this, because it should help. It obviously helps get your best players back on the field for late in the season. So if you're a team, you know, that's theoretically in playoff contention or trying to make a push here, I mean, this is all good for you.
Judy, is there any stipulations to the rule? Like you can't have two guys come back in 1 week or anything like that?
No, it's just going to be straight up the same as the rules. You know, you'd have to be on IR for 6 weeks, and then you bring them back, and then there's that two-week window where you work out, and then they'd be available again. So, you know, again, I can't imagine why any team would oppose this, because it certainly benefits teams. I would think coaches would be delighted with this, because let's face it, if you're quarterback and top receiver both, you know, sprain their ankles badly in week two, in the past you'd have to make a decision, you know, which one you would bring back. Now you don't have to make that decision. You could bring them both back. So I think it's a boon for teams all the way around.
Hey, Judy, as my partner Donald is fond of pointing out, I've been around the league for a long time, and I do recall going back 25 years maybe when the injured reserve rule was 6 weeks, and it was unlimited, as many guys as you want. Teams back then, and this is 80s, I guess, were in the habit sometimes of stashing players. So right. You don't want to cut a guy. You don't want to expose him to waivers. Maybe he'll come up with an ankle sprain in the final preseason game, and you can right. Stash him for 6 weeks and then bring him back. It's just interesting to me that they went from that to the rule where nobody comes back when you go on IR to now a little bit of loosening of the rule. I don't think stashing would be an issue, but it is interesting, I think, that it's going, the pendulum swung back the other way.
Well, stashing was a big part of the conversation when they changed the rule in 2012 to allow them to bring one guy back off IR. That was a big, you know, point of concern, that our team's going to start stashing guys. And I think they determined that was not going to happen. And I also think they determined that the risk of that was outweighed by, you know, the league's desire to have its best players on the field and available in the most critical portion of the year. Mm-hmm. Again, if your quarterback goes down in week two with, let's say, hypothetically, you know, a knee injury that's not season-ending but is going to cost them, you know, at least a month, it's in everybody's best interest, not just the player, not just the team, but in the league, to have its best players on the field for the games that matter most. So I think they sort of got over their fear of stashing. I think they feel like teams really don't do that anyway. But I think they thought even the risk of a team trying to stash a player is outweighed by the benefits of having your best players available.
We're on the line with Judy Batista, columnist for NFL.com and a NFL Network reporter. The other issue coming up next week at the owners' meetings, Judy, deals with overtime and a proposal to cut the length of overtime during the regular season from 15 minutes to 10 minutes. What's the impetus for that?
The impetus is, they say, player safety. They are concerned about if a team plays almost a full overtime, 15 minutes, whether the game ends in a tie or, you know, whether a game-winning field goal is kicked at the buzzer. It's just the additional number of plays for those players. And the real concern is if you're a team that plays a game, let's say, on Sunday that goes the full 15 minutes of overtime, and then let's say you have to turn around and play a Thursday night game, that short turnaround, they feel, is really detrimental to the team. I was surprised when they proposed this. This came up at the March League meeting. I was surprised at how many coaches supported it and supported it strongly. And they said, you know, John Harbaugh from the Ravens said, players are gassed after 10 minutes of overtime anyway. And Bill O'Brien from the Texans made a point, you know, a lot of fans are saying, wait a minute, aren't we going to have a ton more ties, and ties are awful. Bill O'Brien does not think that's the case. He says coaches coach to the clock, and he thinks it will force coaches to be more aggressive in play calling near the end of regulation and in overtime. He said coaches don't want ties any more than fans want them. They want the win. And so he thinks you're going to see more aggressive play calling. Maybe you'll see onside kicks, maybe more daring in the passing game. So I think they feel like they've got to do this from a player safety. They want to try to decrease the number of snaps that additional snaps that players have to have. And the fact of the matter is Thursday Night Football is not going anywhere, so they need to do things to sort of reduce the impact of that short turnaround.
Judy, do you think – now, there's been a lot of talk this year about just trying to shorten the length of NFL games anyway. Do you think this had anything to do with that?
They say no. The shortening the length of games, they feel, is much more of like an administrative issue. Like, they want to speed up, you know, we've talked a lot about replay review in the offseason. They want to speed that process up. They want to eliminate the dead time in games. You know, think of, like, if you're watching a game on TV and frequently after a touchdown is scored they come back out of the commercial and the special teams unit, the kickoff unit, is still not lined up on the field, right? They're still on the sideline talking to the special teams coach. The NFL wants to get rid of that dead time. Like, get on the field. You know, they want them on the field when you come out of the commercial break, kickoff, let's go. So I think their feelings about speeding up, it's not speeding up the play of the game, it's just speeding up all the dead time, removing the dead time. So I think this is much more reducing the overtime. It doesn't happen that often that games go the full 15 minutes anyway, so I don't think you're going to see a drastic impact here. But I think it's much more about trying to reduce the number of snaps guys have to play, especially, again, on short weeks.
Are these two proposals going to be approved, do you think, Judy, this year, next week?
Yeah, I think the people I've talked to expect that they will both be approved. The overtime rule did not have a vote at the March meeting, but they did take sort of a straw ballot, and it was only one vote short of approval at that point. So I would absolutely expect that, and I was told that they expect the IR rule to pass too. And I can't imagine why any team would oppose the IR rule anyway.
Yeah. With Judy Batista from NFL.com and NFL Network. Hey, Judy, a week or two ago, you wrote kind of a little bit of a recap of the draft, and this got my attention when you wrote this, and I think it's a good point. Going into the draft, there was much talk about the top-tier quarterbacks and how, you know, how many holes there were in their game, and maybe there wasn't a quarterback worthy of a first-round pick. You get to Thursday, the first night of the draft, not only do teams not have doubts about these guys, they're trading up, they're moving up, you know, three of them in the top 12 picks. What happened? How did that change?
Every year we see this. I think this year the doubts were, lingered a lot longer. I mean, but we've seen this in the past where you start the off-season evaluation process, the Senior Bowl kind of thing, and then into the combine, where you think that the quarterbacks are not going to be at the very, very top of the draft order, and then the concerns start to alleviate and the desperation comes up.
So
this year it really showed off, because certainly all throughout the evaluation process, which we're hearing from coaches and scouts, was none of these guys should be ready to play this year. None of them are that close. They all would benefit from a year as an apprentice. Some of them might need more than one season as an apprentice. However, we all know that once the games start, that goes out the window, right? Because if the quarterback that you have in place is just not performing and you got the, rookie third overall draft pick over here sitting on the bench, you're going to throw him in there. So we see it every year. It's not surprising. I mean, I think the Bears caught everybody by surprise with the Trubisky deal because nobody really had that on their radar. But no surprise that the quarterbacks always get pushed to the top of the draft.
You know, Donald knows this. My partner, ever since I came back from the Super Bowl and I had a conversation with Tom Dimitroff of the Falcons, he said something that just resonates still in what you've reported on here. If you don't have your franchise quarterback, you are consumed in your pursuit of him, right?
That's right. You've got nothing. Yeah. If you don't have the franchise quarterback, you can have everything else and you're still missing the most important piece. And I think we see that every year. Again, last year, there was no Andrew Luck in this draft, right? And there was no Jameis Winston in this draft. Last year, we went and see a process. Did anybody think, that we would see the guys that we saw rise all the way up the board? No, we didn't until later in the evaluation process. Again, this year, I think there was a real sense that none of these guys are close, and that's why it maybe took longer for the doubts to be eased. Mm-hmm. But, these are teams. When you think of, for instance, the Houston Texans, the Houston Texans is an example of a team that has pretty much everything else in place. We saw in the playoffs last year, if they had had even something close to a semblance of viable quarterback play in the playoff game, they might have beaten the Patriots in the playoffs. So, they are sort of the perfect example of you got to try, and they were aggressive and they went to get their guy. He may not be ready immediately, but I'd be hard-pressed to think that he won't be ready sooner rather than later.
Judy, as you talk about the Houston Texans, that was a team that, they kind of missed on or struck out on Brock Osweiler and that whole situation and bringing him over from Denver. So that goes to show you how desperate these teams are when they give him that type of deal. But, John and I have talked about this with multiple people and just how the league is going now in these quarterbacks and the way they are structuring the contracts with these quarterbacks like a Tyrod Taylor, where it's sort of like a bridge deal, and then they'll trade up in the draft to get, that quarterback that they think might be their franchise quarterback. Is that something that you see moving forward in this league a lot, where they're giving these guys, it seems like a big deal, but it's truly like a one-year bridge deal?
Well, I think that's sort of what we saw in Chicago, right, with Mike Glennon, too. Mm-hmm. They gave him what appears to be a starter's deal, but it's pretty short-term starter's deal. And then they went and got the young guy that they think is the franchise guy, you know, mm-hmm. theoretically for the next dozen years, or what they hope for the next dozen years. I think, again, you see teams doing whatever they think they have to do. Like, we saw this at the Jets, you know, here where I live, that they have had bridge quarterback after bridge quarterback, right? I mean, nobody thought Ryan Fitzpatrick was a long-term answer, mm-hmm. But he got them through, you know, a season, played really well last year. They brought him back thinking he could do it again. He didn't. And now you got Josh McCown here. Now, they've got young guys on the roster, right? They've got Christian Hackenberg, who they want to see. They haven't seen him on the field at all. But Josh McCown is sort of your veteran, steady guy who can be a mentor in the locker room, and he can be the bridge. Maybe he starts the season until you think Hackenberg is ready. Maybe Hackenberg beats him out in training camp and all of this is moot. But he was signed as a bridge quarterback to get you to the young guys, whether that's Hackenberg or Bryce Petty or somebody that they have to draft next year in what is expected to be a much, much stronger draft class for quarterbacks.
What do you think is going to happen with that quarterback situation down there?
All right, since I brought it up.
Right.
Who knows? They want to give Hackenberg – don't forget, they drafted Hackenberg in the second round last year.
Right.
They did not play him at all last year, which was part of their original plan, was that it was going to be a sort of a redshirt season. Of course, also part of the plan last year was that they were going to be a playoff team, and that didn't work out. So when they did not put him on the field towards the end of the year when it was – you know, sort of when they were trotting out a lot of young guys just to give them a look, I mean, that sent up some warning flags, like, uh-oh, how far away is Hackenberg? But they want to give him every opportunity to win the job. I think it's going to be a very open competition when we get to training camp. You know, they saw Bryce Petty last year. Obviously, if he had blown everybody away, he would now have a stranglehold on the starting job. He didn't. And again, they signed Josh McCown to, you know, bridge the gap here. If those two guys can't do it, McCown starts the season and you get a little more time to get one of those guys ready. I think we're going to see a real wide open competition, though. I have no idea who prevails because, again, we haven't seen anything of Hackenberg. So maybe he has made great strides, you know, in the last however many months.
Hey, Judy, thanks for this. Thanks for your time. We look forward to your reports from the owners' meetings next week. Thank you.
My pleasure, guys. Good to talk to you.
Judy Batista, who covers the NFL for NFL.com, NFL Network as well, reporter. And she's got a couple of video piece and written piece about the changes likely to be approved by NFL owners at their meetings next week in Chicago. Judy joined us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Subway, eat fresh. Hey, we want to hear from you. This Bills offseason continues, obviously. The OTAs continue. But to date, what have been the most impressive things about the Buffalo Bills offseason? What do you think? Give us a call. The phone line's open at 803-0550 or toll-free from outside Buffalo, 1-888-550-2550. That's our Twitter poll. What's been the best offseason move for the Bills so far? We'll check that when we return, and we want to hear from you on the telephone lines as well. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. John Murphy, Donald Jones, coming to you from One Bills Drive. Bills players out on the practice field in New Era Field right now. Maybe it's wrapping up, Donald. Do you see players coming back yet?
No.
I know you're just walking through the field house, right, aimlessly a couple minutes ago?
No, I didn't see anybody.
Okay. So they're
only our
still
camera guys. Yeah, so I don't know.
Okay. Here's a call from Kim in Niagara Falls. Go ahead, Kim. You're on the air.
How are you guys doing today?
Great.
Good.
My vote on the Twitter poll has got to be for the coaching and the personnel side, because you can have the best players in the world, but if your coaching's not good, you guys can't hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
We can hear you.
Oh, okay. If your coaching is not up to snuff and you don't have any continuity, any stability in your organization, I just don't see how you're going to be successful. And if I was a player that uses my body for my job, I don't know that I want to lay it all on the line for this constant chaos and turnover that's going on. So that's my vote.
Okay. Interesting thoughts there, Kim. I won't pick apart that. You can have all the talent in the world. And I think she went on to say that, you know, it doesn't matter. I think it does matter to have talent.
Oh, yeah. You
coaches
have
can
talent.
Screw up talent. But her other point about chaos, and maybe you can speak to this, Donald, you played on some underachieving Buffalo Bills teams. Mm-hmm. What do you think a player's mindset is when there are a couple of guys who've been around through the constant turnover here of coaches and regimes. What do you think that goes through their head? I mean, do they refuse to lay it on the line physically when they're not sure who the boss is going to be next year? I don't know.
Players will always lay it on the line, you know, because it's you, it's your reputation that's on film, you mm-hmm. know, and ultimately, if you're a guy who doesn't want to, let's just say, be here long term, you want to go somewhere else, you know that film, you know, the eye in the sky doesn't lie. They always say that. The eye in the sky doesn't lie. The cameras do not lie. And every team can see everything that you've done, you know. So players are always going to go out there and lay it on the line on Sundays. Now, in terms of free agents coming over, that is where you might have some reservation from guys, you know, where it's like, man, they keep having a new coach every couple of years. You know, I'm coming in and I play in this type of scheme. If in 2 years they change to a 3-4, I don't fit in that scheme, you know. Yeah. So do I want to go there? I don't know about that. It's not just the fact that the team hasn't won in 17 years. It's the fact that you keep turning it over every couple of years, and, mm-hmm. and players don't like that. You know, you want to – when you go in as a free agent, you talk to the coaches. You feel comfortable with the coaches. And so if you don't think that those coaches are going to be there long term, now you got to deal with the whole new coaching staff who might not like you, which means I might not be here because he might say, oh, I don't like this player. He can't fit my system. So – you know, that's something that you really have to think about when you keep turning coaches like that.
Talking about the best offseason move the Bills made so far this year, Dan has a thought on that. Dan in Buffalo. Go ahead, Dan.
Hey, guys. Nice to talk to you. In my eyes, I think the best offseason move so far was actually not picking up Sammy Watkins' fifth-year option. I think that was very smart on behalf of the organization. I think that I mean, I love the wait-and-see approach. I think the motivation for Sammy to have an amazing season is sky high. And that's my thought on that. I think that, and a notable mention would be Steven Hauschka. I think, and this is Buffalo, I think kicking's extremely important here. And to have a big leg and a proven guy, I thought that was a great pickup as well.
Okay. Thanks, Sam.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that was a good pickup. I mean, we all remember our kicking situation last year. I think it's a plus to have a guy like Steven Hauschka come over from Seattle, a guy who's played in the biggest games, the biggest stage out in Seattle where the weather, you know, it's raining a lot. It can be windy in that stadium, different elements and things like that. So, yeah, that's always a plus to bring in over a guy like that. I think it was a good move.
Squeezing one more call here. Jed calling from Florida. Hello, Jed. Welcome. You're on the air with us.
Yes, how you doing, Murph and Donald?
Real good.
I agree with Kim there. You know, I think the coaching decision is finally, you know, it took a while, but as I keep listening to them and everything, it's like it feels like there's finally structure. They finally have a goal. They finally have a mission. And, you know, that and picking up Tyrod, I think, was another major thing because we've been on this Flutie curse since we benched him for Rob Johnson. And I think he's given us the best opportunity as of late to actually win games without turning the ball over, shooting yourself in the foot like EJ did against the Jags there out in London. And so I look forward to seeing how the season goes and tried not to always get the hype with the new guy, but I'm liking how it's shaping out here.
Thanks, Jed. We appreciate that. Hey, by the way, Donald, did you see – I actually retweeted it yesterday – a video piece that our digital media crew did from day one of the OTAs yesterday. They had Sean McDermott mic'd up. Did you see that?
No.
It's good. It's worth watching. And to our listeners and viewers, I would encourage you to look at that. It is Sean McDermott mic'd up for practice yesterday. And there were no great revelations in there. obviously, this is not a hype thing, but I think it helped me get a little bit better understanding of how he coaches, in the moment, on the field, mm-hmm. at practice at least. It wasn't game situation, clearly, but I would highly recommend it. You're looking it up right now, aren't you?
BuffaloBills.com?
Buffalo, of course, BuffaloBills.com.
Right, well, I'm going
to go
check
McDermott
it out.
Sean McDermott mic'd up at practice yesterday. Definitely worth your time. We're going to come back in a moment. We're going to talk with Bill Barnwell, frequent guest on the show from ESPN, a staff writer, covers a lot of NFL football. He is ranked the off seasons for the teams in the NFL, including the AFC East. He gives the Bills a B, kind of what we've talked about today on the show. And we're going to check in with Bill Barnwell. Your phone call is welcome as well. 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. The John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts on One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Radio Network Sports Update.
Got the update from One Bills Drive. Buffalo Bills just now wrapping up day two of organized team activity on the turf at New Era Field today in the sunshine. No contact permitted in the OTAs, but they do get 11-on-11 and 7-on-7 work in. Tomorrow they will open their OTA session to the media, and the coordinators will talk to the media after practice tomorrow. Around the NFL, the Philadelphia Eagles have signed running back LeGarrette Blount, agreeing to terms on a one-year contract. The deal reportedly worth a maximum of $2.8 million. 18 touchdowns for LeGarrette Blount, led the league in touchdowns last year. The Cardinals and Giants both had contract offers out to Blount, but he elects to sign with the Philadelphia Eagles. Tom Brady's wife, Gisele Bündchen, says the Patriots quarterback has a history of concussions, including one suffered last year. She made the statement today on CBS This Morning earlier today. As you heard earlier from Judy Batista of the NFL Network, NFL owners meeting next week in Chicago are expected to give teams more flexibility dealing with injured reserve players, making it possible to put two players on injured reserve with an option to come back designated to return. Stanley Cup playoffs tonight. Wednesday night tonight means game three of the Eastern Conference Final Series between Pittsburgh and Ottawa. The series moves to Ottawa with it tied at one win apiece. That is an 8 o'clock faceoff coming up tonight. Last night, Nashville beat Anaheim 2-1 in game three of that series. Nashville now leads that series 2-1 with game four coming up tomorrow night. Boston Celtics had the best regular season record in the league and home court advantage, but they are the decided underdogs in the NBA Eastern Conference Finals tonight. The Cavs well rested going into the series. Boston just survived game seven two nights ago. Game one tonight, 8:30 p.m. in Boston. And the Buffalo Bisons looking to win their third straight game against Syracuse tonight, 6:05. First pitch at Coca-Cola Field against the Syracuse Chiefs. Buffalo beat Syracuse 6-3 yesterday. T.J. House scheduled to be on the mound for the herd tonight, 6:05 at Coca-Cola Field. It is John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts. John Murphy, Donald Jones live at One Bills Drive. Bill Barnwell is going to join us from ESPN.com. He's kind of reviewing what teams have done in the NFL in their offseason so far. Bill Barnwell, ESPN staff writer, going to join us in a couple of minutes. And sometime in the next few minutes, maybe in the next 45 minutes or so, Cordy Glenn, Bill's left tackle, will join us just coming off the field from OTA. So we have a couple of minutes to talk with you, and the phone lines are open, 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Or you can do it via Twitter at John Murphy Show. We want to know about this Buffalo Bills offseason, which started, 5 months ago, 1st of January, 5.5 months ago. What's been the best move the Bills have made so far this offseason? That is our Twitter poll. It's been up for more than an hour now. The best offseason move for the Bills so far. Right now, the hiring of Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean, 47% of you say that's the best offseason move. 42%, pretty close behind, say the acquisition of an extra first-round pick in next year's draft, the best offseason move. 9% of you say restructuring Tyrod Taylor was the best offseason move. 2% say something else. Let us know what you think. 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550, or via Twitter at John Murphy Show. Andrew Bartlett tweets in, Coach McDermott is the best offseason move. He says everything else has had his fingerprints on it, so he gets credit for being the best move this offseason. And Kim Race says specifically hiring McDermott, which then led to all the other positive moves made, including change of culture.
Yeah.
People like the new coach, Donald.
They like the new coach. And you know, the change of culture and everything that has been said this year, thus far, the moves that they've made, they all seem like the right moves. But once again, they can all seem like the right moves, but you have to win games on Sundays once we get to the season. So for me, you know, I'm always going to be hesitant until we get to that part we get to football season and we can see this actually play out on the field. You know, we can see this culture that we keep talking about play out on the field. You know, what are guys giving on Sundays? What are guys giving on Mondays? You know, after a game, when you see them in here, things like Victory Mondays. Do you have Victory Mondays now? I mean, that's because I remember when I was here, you know, they were like, you don't get Victory Monday until you're basically in the playoffs, you know? So I want to see how he handles these types of things and the other situations that we talked about. Hopefully you don't have any, but every team really has some situations throughout the course of a football season and the off season. And so I want to see how he handles those things, right? So I'm always going to be hesitant. I'm excited about the moves that he's made. I'm excited about the things that he says and his, it seems, his vision for this team, for this franchise. I just want to see it play out.
We've got time to talk about this, and we got lines open at 803-0550 and toll-free from outside Buffalo, 1-888-550-2550. If what we know, and we're just learning about Coach McDermott, if the Bills won eight games last year, this coming year, rather, if they won eight games coming up, how many Victory Mondays do you think they'd have? I'm saying
I don't think any.
Three.
Yeah.
Tops. I just don't see him as that kind of guy.
I don't see him as that kind of guy. Not in his first season. You know, I just don't see him doing that. I think he would say, you know what, guys, once we get to where we're really fighting for a playoff spot and we're in the playoffs, then we can have Victory Mondays. But I don't see him being a guy from day one, like you win week one, you get Victory Monday.
And a lot of it is, it's not just that he's pushing guys, driving guys hard. A lot of it is, I think, and again, we're just learning about Coach McDermott, but my sense is he would probably put a value on Mondays after wins and losses of not being on the field, not, you know, working guys, running guys, or maybe not even a physical presence on the field Monday, but getting in the classroom, reviewing the video from the victory on Sunday, correcting mistakes. There will be mistakes for the most part during victories on Sunday, and just kind of getting into that routine, that mindset of work. I don't, from what I know about him, and we're still learning, I don't think he's the type of guy who would not put an emphasis on that. Look, everybody needs to get away from their job. Certainly, Donald, you and I feel the need to once in a while. But no, I think he kind of, I think he would, he probably values the routine and the discipline. And this is a big part of discipline of going through what went on the field yesterday, correcting mistakes. This is how we do it.
Right.
He talks about earning the right to win, which I think he views as being, you know, kind of locked in on an almost daily basis. They'll get their Tuesday off or whatever, however the regular season schedule is set up. I just don't see him as the kind of guy who would just throw it out the window because of a victory on Sunday. And I'm not saying he's going to have him out there running laps and running sprints on Monday after a win or a loss, for that matter.
I mean, you're going to do your normal Monday routine. Every team really has this similar routine on Mondays where you come in, you work out, you study the film a little bit, and you also, you know, you do some running because you had those aches and pains after a game, and they want you to kind of work that stuff out, work through that type of stuff. So you will come in and do some light jogging and things like that, but he's not going to have him out here on Mondays going hard. You know, we're in practice on Mondays. It's not going to be like that. But just like you said, he talks about earning the right to win, and I think he wants these guys to earn the right to have Victory Mondays, you know, and that's not just winning a game on Sunday. That is – you earn that right when you win a bunch of games and we're now in the playoffs. Now you can have Victory Monday because we want to rest you guys up for the playoffs, things like that. But you have to earn that right. You know, you don't just – like it's a full season. You don't just get to earn the right just because you won a game on Sunday.
And I think he also – and again, as we get to learn this coach a little bit better on almost, you know, day-to-day, week-to-week basis – I'm sure he puts value in respect the process.
Yeah.
There's signs up in the hallway, respect the process. For him, I believe the process includes your Monday routine, looking at video, correcting mistakes, having an honest discussion with your position coach about what went right, what went wrong, what do we need to do better. That, I think, is part of respecting the process. If you immediately throw the process out the window because you win on Sunday and don't gather anybody on Monday, I think that's probably not respecting the process.
Right. I mean, you have the process, and the routine is the big word in there, you know, because players and everybody really in life, you get to a certain routine where you're comfortable and things are just flowing smooth. Now, when you – the football players, once they have a game, they do what they do on Mondays, and then Tuesday is off. You go and you do what you have to do on Tuesday. You're back in on Wednesday. If you start to disrupt that routine, everything is kind of thrown off, you know, and in a coach's mind – if I let these guys go on Monday, then what are they going to do? And these guys have some money. they're going to leave town. I mean, it's just like players do that. Unless they have families here, which most guys don't have families that are here because they're so young, they usually leave town. They go on some sort of a vacation or something like that. I just need to get out of town for 2 days. And so they'll leave Sunday night after the game. I'll be back Tuesday night. And I don't think Coach wants that. You know, he wants these guys here respecting the process, respecting the routine. This is our routine every day until we get into the playoffs.
And this, I think, needs to be said, too. We noticed it how many times last year on Mondays we would get a guest on the show, a victory Monday. There were seven victories last year, in case you forgot. Mm-hmm. And we get a guy in here on the Monday after a win, and we say, why are you here? It's victory Monday. They, you know, and a lot of times it was veterans, too, by the way.
Yeah.
They respect the process, right? They know what they have to do to get ready on Monday, the day after a game, whether it's film study or meeting with the coaches or some kind of a workout, some sort of a post-game workout, day after the game workout. So it's not as if, you know, the doors flung open and, you know, 53 players ran for the hills. I mean, a lot of guys do come in on
victory Mondays, and they're – and you have guys that, because you get so nicked up, that most of these guys need to come in for training, for extra treatment, things like that. But then the veterans know that they have to go and do acupuncture or do whatever it is that they need to do for their body. They're not worried about getting out of town. Now, you're talking about the younger guys on the team that really are like, man, you know, I want to go back home just for a couple of days, things like that. These older guys they're here. They're, you know, a lot of these guys have wives and kids and things. They're not going anywhere, you know. But you want to make sure that the entire team is on board with your message. That message is you earn the right to win. Respect the process. Respect this routine. This is the routine. If you follow this routine and you follow this lead of the coach and the veterans who are in here on Mondays, then this team can end up a playoff contending team.
Let us know what you think. What is the best offseason move the Bills have made so far this year? That is our Twitter poll. We've taken a lot of comments off Twitter, and we'd love to hear you on the phone as well, 803-0550. Toll free 1-888-550-2550. Perhaps you think it is the restructuring of Tyrod Taylor's contract and the flexibility provided to the team with that contract. I mean, for my money, Donald, that worked out pretty well. That would not be my choice for the best thing that happened in the offseason, but you get to keep Tyrod Taylor around for at least a year. Mm-hmm. You get to keep Tyrod Taylor around for at least 1 year, and you get to make another decision next year as far as where you want to go at quarterback. So I can see why people might vote that way. I do think the addition of Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean would be tops on my list, but we'll get to more of your phone calls on that. This all comes about because of a report we came across on ESPN.com by our next guest. He is a staff writer for ESPN. He is host of the Bill Barnwell Show podcast. He's got an off-season report card for essentially every team in the NFL, including the AFC East. Happy to have Bill Barnwell on the Subway Fresh Steak Hotline with us. Bill, thanks for joining us today. John Murphy and Donald Jones, we appreciate it.
My pleasure, guys. Anytime.
Not only have you written a good article, but you provided us with a jumping-off point for our show today, an off-season report card. It's 5.5 months into the off-season. Look, nobody's around here anymore saying the Bills won the off-season, but at least in terms of your off-season grades, you think the Bills did all right for themselves, huh?
I do. And I mean, I'll tell you what, the team that does win the off-season doesn't always get a lot in the season to come. I mean, you think about the Bills offseason, the most prominent offseason they have, the one where you say, okay, well, they accomplished their most goals. That would have been the Mario Williams offseason. I don't know if that really turned out all that well in hindsight. So I think a lot of things the Bills did weren't quite as obvious. They didn't sign the biggest free agent. They lost a free agent, obviously, to the Patriots. That's a little bit crushing in terms of some ways. But in terms of what they did, in terms of cleaning house, which seemed like it was kind of overdue, in terms of getting an extra first-round pick in next year's draft by trading down, getting extra draft assets, I think that was pretty successful. I gave them a B, and I think, some of that could depend on what happens with the Sammy Watkins situation, some other things, but I think there's a lot of reasons to be hopeful about what the Bills did over the last few months.
Your article kind of inspired us for a Twitter poll today, Bill, and we asked Bills fans tuned in what was the best move in the offseason. I don't know if you'd be surprised by this or not, but 42%, I think it is, say picking up that extra first-rounder next year was the best move. You've got that in your category of things that went well this offseason for Buffalo, don't you?
It does. I mean, the issue is that trading down is generally a good move. There are times where, yes, you trade down and you give up a chance at Julio Jones or Carson Wentz, and you tend to regret it. That does happen. But the vast majority of the time, the teams who trade down, they end up liking it. It's being a positive move for them because you just don't know how teams are going to turn out the next year. And they end up getting a pretty nice pick out of it. So the Bills, they traded the first-round pick away in the Sammy Watkins trade. That move looks pretty bad in hindsight. They traded a couple picks away last year in the Reggie Ragland trade. Unfair to say whether that's going to work out or not, given that Reggie Ragland hasn't played, of course, due to injury. But, you know, trading up for an inside linebacker tends to be a pretty ill-advised move. So getting an extra first-round pick after missing those picks over the past couple of years is so valuable. It gives you a chance at a low-cost player who's going to be an impact player at a position for at least 4 years. So, of course, first-round picks don't necessarily have to work out. Things can happen here or there, of course, but you're getting a shot at having a guy like Tre'Davious White at a position like cornerback where guys are getting $11, $12 million a year. You know, that first-round pick's going to cost you $4 or $5 million a year max over the course of a four-year period. So you're just saving a ton of money versus what it costs to get a guy like that on the free market. So you can put that money elsewhere. You can put that money towards getting a quarterback or getting a receiver or getting an offensive lineman. You know, you're just saving money here, so you can put that money and those assets elsewhere. And so it ends up being a really valuable trade for a lot of teams. And I think that given the Bills' specific roster construction, given the trades they made in years past, I thought it was just a really strong move on their end to get an extra first-round pick, even if it meant trading down to the bottom of the first round.
Bill, you talked about in your post, you talked about Brandon Bean, the new GM, how he basically walks into two first-round picks next year. And, I mean, if you're a first-time GM, that's all you can ask for, right? For you to walk into a situation like, I have two first-round picks to work with next year. But what do you think about, you know, the new coach and the GM together and everybody else that they brought in underneath them?
I mean, you know, it seems like it's kind of a reaction to what happened in years past, right, where there was it seemed like some level of organizational dysfunction with the Bills, whether it was the lack of communication, whether it was people with different motivations, different incentives. That seemed like an issue. That's not going to be the case here. You know, it's too early to say whether Sean McDermott or Brandon Bean are good at their jobs. You know, you never know until you actually see them performing over the couple of years, but at least they're on the same page. Listen, they're still working together. And that, I think, is a positive sign. And a difference between maybe what was the case with Rex Ryan and Doug Whaley. The early moves they've made, you know, it seems pretty fair. And I think given the draft, given that we know that hindsight that Doug Whaley wasn't really running the draft, that it was mostly Sean McDermott, it makes sense to trade your pick away and get an extra pick next year because you're hoping that the scouting you have next year, the scouts you have next year, the department you have looking at players next year, you're hoping they're going to be better at evaluating talent than the guys who were evaluating talent for this year's draft. So it makes sense to try and trade up into next year's draft, try and get extra picks for next year. And I think that you know, having those two first-round picks, like you said, is great for a general manager. Having a quarterback who's set, you know, is exciting because most general managers are not inheriting a quarterback as good as Tyrod Taylor. So I just think it's actually a pretty positive situation. I think if you are Brandon Bean, it's one of the better opportunities you're going to have, given that you're going to be taking a GM job at somewhere around the league.
With Bill Barnwell, ESPN staff writer, his most recent post deals with offseason report cards. He gives the Bills a B for their offseason so far. One of the things you say went right for the Bills is what they did with Tyrod Taylor, Bill. It seems to me, although, again, that might not be at the top of my list, I mean, we looked at it in terms, you know, 6 months ago, like, well, either they keep Tyrod or they don't, and if they keep him, they're going to pay him a lot of money, and if they don't, then they won't be able to compete. They seem to have found the best of both worlds on what they did with Tyrod Taylor, didn't they?
Yeah. It seems like Tyrod Taylor kind of gave in a bit towards the end of those negotiations. They wanted to stay in Buffalo, wanted to get that job that he had, and was willing to take less money to do it. And so I think ended up being a pretty decent win for the Bills. The first contract they handed him was aggressive in terms of it would have been, not that he's not talented, because I think he really is. I think he's a very good quarterback, a very underrated quarterback, but just it would have been paying him market value for above-average quarterback play. And with this job, with this contract, it's a little more flexible for the Bills. They're saving money, of course, and there's a chance that he could be worth more than the contract. You know, if he's making $15 million a year, which is what he's going to make on this new deal pretty much, you know, if you play like a great quarterback, you're worth more than $15 million a year when you consider someone like Mike Glennon's getting $15 million a year. Now, when he's making 21, 22, it's just tough to really be worth more than that. So I think you have an opportunity to get a bargain to some extent with Tyrod Taylor with this new deal, and they have the flexibility of still getting out of it after this year. It ends up being something where they find that Cardell Jones is a good option, or they have a quarterback they want to target in the next year's draft, and they want to trade Tyrod Taylor. There are options they can work with. And so I think it ended up being a really good deal for the Bills in hindsight. And it wasn't a good deal until they renegotiated here, but I think that the deal they renegotiated ended up being, you know, fair to both parties. Tyrod Taylor's getting life-changing money on a long-term deal, which he deserved, and I think the Bills are getting a lot of flexibility, which is something they really value.
What do you think went wrong for the Bills so far in offseason, Bill?
Well, I mean, I don't think I'd be the only one saying that the Patriots are a problem in terms of losing Mike Gillisley and Stephon Gilmore to the Patriots. I think it's one thing to lose a player to a guy in the division or to a team in the division, that can be a little overstated because sometimes you don't want those players. But it looks like they're misreading the market on those guys. With Stephon Gilmore, You know, Bills could have franchised him and paid him $14 million a year and had him for 1 year and have the flexibility of seeing how he plays when, you know, under a new defensive coordinator, seeing how he plays in a new scheme, seeing if the defense improves under Leslie Frazier and if Gilmore improves with them. And then you have the leverage of using that one-year deal to offer him a long-term contract to keep him in town. And the Bills let him go, and the Patriots are paying him the same amount of money over 3 years. They're paying him $14 million a year over the first 3 years of his new long-term contract. So clearly, I think it's fair to say the market would have valued him in that range, in that $14 million per year range. So it's tough for me to believe that he wasn't worth $14 million on a one-year deal. Now, of course, the Bills might have used that money elsewhere. That's a fair argument. But you could theoretically sign him and trade him. You could sign him and then release him if you have other options. There's you're giving him up for what would be a comp pick, but then they're signing a bunch of low-level free agents, and Micah Hyde and Patrick DeMarco and Steven Hauschka, and they're not going to get a comp pick for Stephon Gilmore, which is really disappointing. So I feel like the Gillisley one, I love Gillisley. I think it's a super efficient running back. I can understand wanting to maybe move on from a running back like him, thinking you could find another guy, you know, in free agency or at the bottom of the draft to replace him. But Gilmore, I just think I think they misread the market, and it's going to end up, you know, even if he's not a superstar in New England, I think it's going to come back to haunt them because they're not going to get anything, even a comp pick, in return for him.
Now, you also talked about what's next for the Bills, and you were just speaking about Mike Gillisley and how they decided to let him go. So what is next for the Bills?
Well, I said they should bring in a running back and brought up LeGarrette Blount. Unfortunately, that's no longer the case because he signed with the Eagles today on a one-year $2.8 million deal. So that's off the market. I brought up D'Angelo Williams as someone who makes sense just because you figure Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott are, they spent a ton of time in Carolina. They saw D'Angelo Williams there. Mm-hmm. I think he's one of the, you know, has a reputation deservedly and one of the best people in the NFL. Someone who wasn't at his best last year in Pittsburgh, but was great the year before, backing up Le'Veon Bell. You know, saw some football in him if he wants to play. So I would look towards him. But I think you just need to bring in somebody to play behind LeSean McCoy. Jonathan Williams, Joe Banyard, you know, those guys could play a role. But I would want to bring in someone just to have a body in camp and just in case Shady McCoy gets hurt, because as great as Shady is, he has had injury issues in the past, and he's getting older. He's have a lot of carries on his back. So I would want to have some depth there just in case of injuries after losing Gillisley.
Bill Barnwell, ESPN staff writer on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline with us. He is assigned offseason grades. He gives the Bills a B. You give the New England Patriots a B, Bill. And when you went through your Patriots analysis, among the things that you say went wrong for New England was the fact that they did not deal Jimmy Garoppolo. Can you talk about that a little bit? Why did you think that was priority for them?
Well, I mean, you know, you can make a case for keeping Garoppolo, right? You could say that he could be a quarterback of the future for the Patriots. He could be a decent backup if Brady gets hurt. You know, he could have trade value in the year to come. All those things make sense to me. All those are valid. I don't know if Brady's going to get hurt just because, realistically, Brady hasn't missed a game outside of the torn ACL in many years via injury. He was suspended 4 games last year. That's why we saw Garoppolo. Garoppolo got hurt himself in his stead. But every move the Patriots made this offseason in terms of trading draft picks away, in terms of acquiring veterans, it seems like they're maximizing their window right now. They want to try and win the Super Bowl again next year and the year after that with Tom Brady. Tom Brady's contract's going to run out. He's, of course, getting older. The end of his career is coming. He says he's going to play till 70. I'm skeptical he's going to last quite that long. When the end comes for Tom Brady, it's going to be very sudden, most likely, because that's what happened with Peyton Manning. It was the same sort of thing where he was great until he wasn't great, and then the end came very quickly. So with Garoppolo, it's just tough because they're going to lose him after this year unless they franchise him for $20 million to be their backup quarterback, which is a little crazy and very hard to pull off. They lose a lot of talent if they franchise Garoppolo. So you don't want to lose him for nothing. You don't want to lose him for a comp pick. And so this was their best chance to trade him and get a significant asset for him now, whether it was going to be a top 10 pick, whether it was going to be multiple first-rounders, whether it was going to be a valuable defensive piece, great offensive lineman. It could be a lot of different things. But if they're going to try and win with Tom Brady right now, you want to maximize all your assets to getting the best opportunity to win right now. And with Garoppolo, he's not a right now asset. He's a future asset. He's the guy after Brady. And so if you're trading your draft picks, if you're acquiring Brandon Cooks, if you're trading for Coney Ealy, if you're going after guys like that, it kind of seems like you would trade Jimmy Garoppolo away and try and guys who are going to help you right now. I understand not trading him. I can't really fault them for not trading him, but it doesn't really add up given the other roster moves they made this offseason.
Now, we talked about this yesterday and this whole Garoppolo situation. And like you said, his contract is going to be up. And you know, what are you going to give him to be the backup quarterback? He's going to want out of there. And then, you know, Tom Brady's career is coming to an end very soon here. Do you think there's a chance that, you know, they decide to go ahead and walk away from Brady and just make Garoppolo the starter?
Oh, man, that would be incredible, huh? I mean, if anyone has the guts to do that, it is Bill Belichick, who's walked away from Richard Seymour, who's traded Randy Moss, who's traded all kinds of guys, Logan Mankins, at the end of their careers, even Lawyer Malloy, of course, he cut and came to Buffalo.
Right.
He has no fear about that stuff. I would be afraid of moving on from Tom Brady before Tom Brady decides he is done. That is the one exception I'm going to make to that rule is I'm going to roll with Tom Brady until Tom Brady no longer wants to roll with me, and I would be terrified of doing that. Bill Belichick's not me. He's much smarter than me. He can make that move. It could be something, and this is maybe the case, where quietly among them, among Garoppolo, Brady, Belichick, and Don Gee, who represents both Brady and Garoppolo as their agent, there could be a time frame that we don't know about. There could be a succession plan where they say, okay, in 2 years, Garoppolo is going to come start for us, and we're going to sign him to a contract where it's going to escalate in 2 years, and Brady's going to either retire or move on, and we're going to let, you know, all leave cordially, and know that's going to be the case. I don't know. It's impossible for me to say because I don't have that information. But it does seem weird. It does seem weird that the Patriots are comfortable just kind of letting this go to next year and trusting that they're going to end up shining. The Patriots have a way of making that work, but it doesn't seem to add up. Like, there's something missing here. Either there's something they know that we don't know, there's something about Brady that we don't know that they know, or it's something about how the market's going to adjust and how the market's going to shift that we're not anticipating that the Patriots are ahead of the curve on. Most teams, I would not give them the benefit of the doubt. The Patriots, I kind of feel like they deserve the benefit of the doubt. That's this point, for better or worse.
They've earned the benefit of the doubt. Hey, before we let you go, Bill, we talked about your offseason grade of B for the Bills, B for the Patriots, C-plus for the Jets, and D-plus for Miami. Can you just talk about the Jets and Miami, kind of a quick overview of their offseasons and how you landed on those grades?
Sure, the Jets are in rough shape. I mean, they have a lot to do in terms of reconstructing their roster. I think you have to give them credit for committing to it. You know, they didn't go with a half measure. They cut Brandon Marshall. They cut Darrell Revis. They went after guys and are really going to go after young talent. I just was hoping they were going to upgrade a quarterback. I think Josh McCown, you know, tough guy, but doesn't have really that much going for him in terms of his success at the NFL level, in terms of developing guys. There's not really that history of turning guys to better quarterbacks behind him. The Dolphins, they were very surprisingly good last year. A lot to be excited about there, but they spent a lot of money, and the money they spent just doesn't add up. It doesn't add up in terms of, you know, similar guys in the market at their positions where they were adding players were a lot cheaper than the guys they were adding or the guys they were holding on to. It feels like they think that they are an ascendant team, an 11-win team that's going to be an 11-win team over the next 5 years, and they have to keep the core of that team together, and I just allow them. The underlying numbers say they're just not that good of a team, that they were a little bit lucky last year, and so the commitments they've made, just think that they're going to end up regretting some of the signings they've made over the last few months.
It's good reading, Bill. We thank you for spending a few minutes with us today to talk about it.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Sean.
Thanks.
Anytime.
All right. Bill Barnwell is a staff writer, covers the NFL for ESPN, the host of the Bill Barnwell podcast, and he's got his 2017 offseason report card for the entire NFL. He wrote about the AFC East yesterday. He gives the Bills a B, gives the Patriots a B, gives the Dolphins a D plus, and the Jets a C plus. Kind of all middle of the pack grades, but it's interesting to hear what he says.
I think it's hard to give teams an A, right? Like,
right.
Can you give a team an A? I think the best you can really ask for is a B. I think the Bills did a good job in the offseason.
Yeah.
Overall,
for
like everything. Yeah, for what it's worth. We'll see how it plays out in September and then years to come, but it seems we're not saying that they won the offseason.
No, nobody's saying that. The Bill Barnwell segment, Bill joined us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline, Subway Eat Fresh. What has been the best move for the Bills this offseason? Want to re-engage with you on that. We've got phone lines open at 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-552-550. You can weigh in on Twitter. The best offseason move for the Bills so far. What would you say it is? That's our Twitter poll. And right now, 47% of you say the hiring of Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean ranks as the best offseason move for the Bills. 42%, not far behind, say the acquisition of another first-round draft pick next year was the best offseason move. 9% say restructuring Tyrod Taylor's deal. 2% have something else in mind. Let's talk about it on the phone lines at 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-552-550. The John Murphy Show, presented by NEPA Auto Parts. We are live at One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. John Murphy and Donald Jones live from One Bills Drive. Want to hear from you. What is the best move the Bills have made in this offseason? That's our Twitter poll. And we've had people sending in suggestions, including restructuring Tyrod Taylor's deal, including the hiring of the head coach Sean McDermott and the GM Brandon Bean. Some people think it's the acquisition of the second first-round pick next year. Some people think it's the kicker. You know what? And by the way, the phones are open if you want to address this, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-552-550, or you can do it on Twitter. One thing that I think is a little bit overlooked, underrated, Donald, and it just struck me when I was outside getting a breath of fresh air, the construction of the new practice fields, the outdoor practice fields next to the fieldhouse.
Yes,
that's a good thing. That's good. They're going to have plenty of room to stretch out over there when that's done. And those guys, by the way, those workmen have been working like dogs. Like, they work weekends. They work evenings.
Yeah, they work
early mornings.
They work a lot, you know. Yeah. And they've kind of been hampered by the weather because we had so much rain, so they can't really work through the rain that we had. Sometimes they are out there working in the rain.
Yeah.
But I think it's going to be a nice thing. I mean, it just looks so much bigger. You know, like, I think there's going to be, what, three fields out there?
Two and a half at least, I think.
Two and a half fields out there. Two and a half to three fields out there. That is big. You know, you can get a lot done on with that much space to work with. So I think it's going to be good for the players moving forward. They'll be able to hold a lot of different practices outside. You want to kind of be outside as much as you can. And to have a couple of different fields to work on means that you don't have to work on the same field and dig up the same grass every day.
It looks good, and they're really working hard on it. That's a positive offseason development, I believe, for this team, which not on our Twitter poll. Doesn't mean much, I think, in big picture. But I think back to Brandon Bean sitting here Friday, the day he got hired, and I asked him about facilities. He goes, yeah, we got the Bills have really good facilities, locker room, practice facilities, new training room this offseason. Weight room. Mm-hmm. This is a first-class place.
You know, it's definitely first-class in terms of the facilities. But how it's very important for, you know, people to understand how first-class helps out in recruiting free agents and just getting guys to love to come into work because it's like, man, I want to go in there to the training room. I want to go in there to that locker room. It's a nice place to be in. Now, you still got to go to work. We're not saying that you can just come in here and go to sleep. But it's good to have nice facilities. And it's also important to have a couple of different fields out there because I'm telling you, coaching staffs want to be outside. They want to be out in the elements. You want your players to get used to working in these different elements because once you get later in the season, there are going to be different elements that you have to work with. And we don't want to have to be inside every day.
Surprised no one has said removing the ping pong tables from the locker room.
That's going to come up now that we talked about it.
Your thoughts, the best offseason development so far for the Bills, 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-552-550. A call here from Russ. Hello, Russ. Welcome. You're on the show with us.
Hello, guys. Best move they made was Tyrod Taylor because there was three, four teams or maybe five teams waiting for Buffalo to make a move with him before they did anything, number one. Number two, worst move is you let Gillespie go because he's going to haunt you. Okay? And, you know, he comes in, and I understand with this, very decisive structure that he wants to do. When he's making the statement, though, that there's no roster spots guaranteed, we all know there is. Okay? So I don't know what he thinks he's doing as far as fooling people. McCoy doesn't guarantee a roster spot. Or let's say Kyle Williams or Jerry Hughes. See, that I don't like. He doesn't have to say that. Just say, you got to play for your spot. But Quick can sit on the sidelines the whole offseason and he starts.
Well, but you don't want that message. Thanks, Russ. You don't want that message being sent out by the head coach.
Right.
You don't want the head coach to say, "We don't." You know, LeSean McCoy doesn't have to practice. You just don't want that.
And you don't.
Russ is a big Gillespie fan, thinks it's going to come back to haunt him. I think he was the one who said yesterday it'll cost the Bills some wins. I don't see that.
You know, you definitely don't want that message to go out from your head coach and not from your GM, nobody from up top. You know, you want the message to trickle down from ownership to GM and head coach all the way down through the players, through that locker room. Guys, you have to come in here and earn the right to start on this team. You have to come in here and earn the right to play in this league. This is a privilege to play in this league, you know. And so don't think that because you're – so-and-so that you're just given a spot, even if you're Shady McCoy. Now, we all know that Shady McCoy is going to be the starting running back, but we want you to come in here and work hard every day and show the guys behind you and the younger guys around this locker room that, yeah, I am Shady McCoy, but I still come in to work every single day. You know, that's why he says things like that. It's not for him to threaten Shady McCoy. It's just to try to send a message so Shady understands he needs to come in to work so that everybody else can follow suit.
Best thing the Bills have done in the offseason so far, give us a call, 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550, or via Twitter at John Murphy Show. A couple of tweets in answer to that question. Chris Pearson says, picking up another number one pick is huge for talent acquisition from the draft or talent from other teams. Brandon Cooks went to the Patriots for a number one. Yeah, no question. That's an asset, a serious asset to have an extra number one. John Dubik tweets, in all of the above, meaning Tyrod, the hiring of Bean and McDermott, and all of the above, including our draft picks. He said, I believe we have a great draft with at least three starters. Yeah, I was watching the rookie workout over the weekend, Donald, and thinking about that. Do you know what an influx of talent it could be if Deion Dawkins steps in and starts a tackle? Obviously, I think we expect Tre'Davious White to be a starter. And if Zay Jones is a starter, I mean, three new starters, that's big. I mean, that would be a successful draft.
I think almost
you can say that in September if those three are on the field as starters.
Yeah, I mean, you could say in September that, you know, if those guys step in as starters right away, that it was successful to this point. And then let's just see how these guys play on the field on Sundays, because then that's the real – you know, telling answer right there. Like, right. That is what tells you, okay, these guys they earn their starting spots, but then how does it play out on Sundays? Are they good players on Sundays, or were they just practice players? You have that once you get here in this league. You have guys that look great in practice. They earn starting spots. Once the lights come on Sundays, they just can't perform, you know. So we'll see how that plays out. And in terms of Tre'Davious, I expect him to step in there and be at least a nickel or something like that. But, man, you have guys like Sharice Wright and those veteran corners that want that spot as well, you know, so they're coming for it.
Hey, the Patriots got the B from Bill Barnwell, as did the Bills. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about that and a roster move today, or at least a NFL move that impacts the Patriots. They lost a pretty good running back to the Philadelphia Eagles. We'll talk about that when we return. John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
John Murphy and Donald Jones live at One Bills Drive. Bills off the field from their afternoon OTA session. 2 days into the 10-day organized team activities. Another one tomorrow. We'll be able to get a good look at that tomorrow, 11 a.m. tomorrow, and it is open to the media. And a couple of coordinators talking tomorrow. So lots of intel coming out of the Bills practice tomorrow. Want to hear from you about this Buffalo Bills offseason? Bill Barnwell of ESPN says the Bills' grade should be a B for their offseason move so far. What do you think? What's your grade, and what's the best move they've made in this offseason? Lines open, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Donna, we spent a lot of time over the last several months talking about the fate of LeGarrette Blount. 18 touchdowns last season, led the NFL. Patriots, signed Gillislee to the offer sheet. Apparently, Blount is out of the picture. Then the Patriots put that May 9 tag on him, or is that it last week? Is that what they call it? So preserving some rights in terms of compensation. And today, of course, the news is that LeGarrette Blount has agreed to terms on a one-year deal with the Philadelphia Eagles. Could be worth $2.8 million. 18 touchdowns. He's 30 years old. He is a good complement to the kind of backfield the Eagles have. He signed with Philadelphia. They've got Darren Sproles and a couple of other smaller guys. LeGarrette Blount would seem to be a good complement to that. So it turns out he doesn't stay with the Patriots after all. Right. They don't get much in terms of compensation from Philadelphia based on this pick, from what I understand. Now, what do you make of all this?
Are there any guarantees in this? Did it say in there? Any
doesn't
guarantees?
Say.
I wonder if there are any guarantees or if he really has to come there and make the team, you know. And he's one of the more interesting stories in the offseason because of the season he had last year.
Yeah.
You know, you would think that a team would say, you know what, we want to bring this guy in. Even if it's a 1 year with this much guaranteed, I want to know what's guaranteed. If he really has to go in there and make that team, because when you look at what they have on their roster, I mean, they still have, I guess, Ryan Matthews. They still have the shorter running back.
I can't Sproles?
Yeah, Sproles. They just drafted the rookie, Donnell Pumphrey, out of San Diego State. So they have a sort of crowded running back room, you know? So I wonder if he has to go in there and make that team.
What I've been reading said Ryan Matthews could be the odd man out there. Obviously, they have time to figure this out. Big loss for the Patriots. What do you think?
I think they expect Mike Gillisley to be that guy, that short yardage pounding type of back, you know? So I don't know if Blunt is a big loss. He's done a lot for them in the last couple of years, though, so it could be a big loss.
Is Gillisley that guy? He's a different style.
He's a different style, but he's a, you know, downhill type of running back.
Not quite as big, though, as Blunt.
Not quite as big. He does run hard, and he's probably faster than Blunt.
Yeah.
You know, so they'll have a home run hitter if he proves to be that.
This bit of Patriots news today, as we do Patriots talk today. Giselle Bundchen, Tom Brady's supermodel wife, on CBS this morning today, in answer to a question about concussion, said, quote, he had a concussion last year. He has concussions pretty much every, I mean, we don't talk about it, but he does have concussions. He was responding to a question about whether Giselle wants Tom Brady to retire. And she said, you know, he has had concussions. Now, Patriots did not list Brady on the injury report at any point last season as having a concussion. So you wonder if Giselle Bundchen knows exactly what constitutes a concussion, at least in terms of, you know, the way the league defines it. Right. But that's not unusual, right? I mean, you get knocks to the head. Some are more serious than others. What to Giselle is a concussion to her man Tommy is probably not a concussion to Bill Belichick.
Right, exactly.
Right? You got dinged.
I don't even know why this is an issue today.
Is this fake news?
It might be fake news. Because why is it an issue? I mean, the guy had concussions. It wasn't reported. He didn't come out of the games. They ended up winning the Super Bowl. I mean, what are we talking about right now? I mean, she said something, and now it's just gone viral and gone national. It's amazing. Now, the fact that he has had concussions and didn't come out of the game, I guess you can say, you know, did the team know he had concussions, and did they just leave him in there? Did they go through the proper concussion protocol? Because nothing ever came out that he had anything. You can question things like that, but – I mean, this is last year. He never came out. He still played very well.
Right.
He never really showed signs of anything. So what are we talking about?
Brady's 39 years old. He told ESPN the other day, quote, I always said my mid-40s as to how long he wants to play. He said that means around 45. If I get there and I still feel like I do today, I don't see why I wouldn't want to continue.
I don't know.
And that's what got them asking his wife about his long-term future. And she said, well, he's had concussions. Well, that's why it's an issue, I think.
Anyone's wife is like, yeah, you know, I want him. It's about that time. You know, we got enough money in the bank. We got a lot of Super Bowls. I mean, what more can you get from this game? And Tom Brady's like, no, I still want to play. I want more Super Bowls.
45?
More years? It's hard for athletes to walk away from the game. I don't care what you've done. It is so tough for guys to walk away from this game.
Let's take a call from Larry in Amherst. Hello, Larry. Welcome. You're on the air with us.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. How are you guys?
Great.
Good.
Listen, I've got first off season, I think that trade they made with Kansas City was so un-Buffalo Bills-like. It was, like, shocking, but great. It was a great move. Picking up an extra round pick next year is, like, so anti-Doug Whaley. It was like, wow. But I got a question. This is kind of interesting. No, I never hear you talk about this. The Canadian Football League, obviously, I'm going to call it a subset of the NCAA Division I or NFL. And why are there no seeming interest in players over there coming over to the NFL? I mean, is there no account that weak that they wouldn't find any players to come in?
From what I understand, Larry, there's things in their contracts that do not allow them. Once they sign that contract, they are not allowed to, because if that was the case, I mean, you get guys that are really playing good over there that try to come back and leave the Canadian League all the time. So they have to put certain language in their contract so that they don't have their guys just leaving, coming back over to the NFL.
Yeah. Your buddy Naaman.
Yeah. And
plays, right? Naaman
he's told me before, once he, you know, he just did a new deal. Once he did that, because I was like, you didn't think about trying to come back after you had a good season? He was like, man, once I sign that deal, I can't. Like, I'm locked in. They will not allow me to leave.
You would think that Naaman or anybody would have his agent look around to see if there's any interest in the NFL.
And I'm sure guys do that, you know. But, like I said, once you get under that contract, it locks you in. And I'm sure there's certain language. Because everybody would try to leave the Canadian League to come back to the NFL.
We're going to break. We're going to come back. Cordy Glenn's scheduled to join us in the final hour. We want to hear more from you. Best part of the Bills offseason so far? What do you think? Give us a call. John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Radio Network Sports Update.
Update from One Bills Drive. Day two of the Bills organized team activity in the books on the turf at New Era Field this afternoon under brilliant sunshine with 11-on-11 work, 7-on-7 work, no contact permitted. They will have an open OTA session for the media tomorrow with Bills coordinators available to talk before that session. We'll have complete coverage of that coming up on the show tomorrow. Around the NFL, the Philadelphia Eagles have agreed to terms on a one-year contract with running back LeGarrette Blount, said to be worth a maximum of $2.8 million. Blount, with 18 touchdowns last season for the Patriots, he led the league. The Browns added needed cornerback depth yesterday when they agreed to a two-year contract with free agent Jason McCourty, a deal worth up to $6 million. McCourty played for the Tennessee Titans the last eight seasons and was a free agent after he was released in mid-April. Stanley Cup playoffs, the Eastern Conference Finals, game three tonight. The series tied at one win apiece. The series moves to Ottawa. Penguins and Senators, one win apiece, face off tonight at 8 o'clock. Out west, the Nashville Predators beat the Anaheim Ducks 2-1 last night. Nashville now leads that series 2-1. They'll play game four tomorrow night in Nashville. Celtics with the best regular season record in the East, home court advantage against Cleveland, and yet they are the decided underdogs for the NBA Eastern Conference Finals. That series starts tonight. Cavaliers coming off a long rest. The Celtics just survived a seven-game series with Washington in a series that ended on Monday night. Game one tonight in Boston, 8:30 tip-off. The Celtics get the top pick in the NBA draft thanks to that trade they made with the New Jersey Nets, the NBA draft lottery last night. Celtics get the top overall pick. The Lakers will pick number two. And the Buffalo Bisons continue their homestand tonight, their series against the Syracuse Chiefs. They've won two in a row against Syracuse, including a 6-3 victory last night. Tonight they put T.J. House with his four wins on the mound against Syracuse. First pitch 6:05 at Coca-Cola Field downtown. It is the John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts. John Murphy, Donald Jones in our One Buffalo studio in the Ad Pro Sports Training Center. Outside at New Era Field today, it was day two of organized team activity. And joining us right now in studio, coming off the field, is Cordy Glenn, Bills left tackle Cordy Glenn. Thanks for coming by, Cordy. We appreciate it.
No problem.
Good to have you in here. We've been trying to connect with you to get you on the show for a while because, you know, people are interested in you and what you're up to and how your offseason has gone and really what your, you know, your outlook is for the upcoming season.
Yeah, I'm glad to be on.
What do you think about, as you look back at last season, missing five games, health-wise, how are you going into this year, do you think?
Right now I'm just, you know, attacking the rehab process real hard and just trying to be ready for the seasons. We're expecting big things this year, so I'm just trying to do my part in it.
Now, when you have to rehab something like this, I know guys have different ways that they work out in the offseason. You're going into your 6 years, so you might have your way that you like to work out in the offseason, but because that you have to rehab, does that change your normal way of working out?
I don't think so necessarily because, you know, we have, like, a great staff, and it's okay for they have their plan for you, and then you can have suggestions of things that you would like to add to it. So it kind of balances out and works out for everybody.
Donald and I were talking earlier today and even over the last couple of weeks or so, what seems to be, at least from the outside looking in, a pretty high level of participation in all of these off-season workout sessions. There's a lot of people here on a pretty regular basis, right?
Yes. There's a lot of guys here. Everybody's buying in. Everybody's here working hard, getting better, taking the coaching, studying, doing the homework.
Is it typically like this, or, you know, does this new coach, is his message and his vision really resonating around that locker room?
I think definitely it's different. It's a lot of different just from the aspect. It's just I think Coach McDermott is like he's really detailed, mm-hmm. and I think he's helping us become really detailed and worrying about the small things. You know, just focusing on your technique, just your fundamentals, how you carry yourself when you walk around the building, just all the little small things that sometimes you might just forget about or not really think about.
Mm-hmm. We Donald and I each got a quick look yesterday at day one of the OTAs, and what is striking is it's only practice, but it does seem high intensity. It seems like there's a lot of energy, right? Maybe more so than what you've had for a couple of years?
Well, it's always intensity, but I definitely feel another level this offseason with practice out there. Guys are trying to push each other, get each other better. It's pretty serious out there right now.
Did Coach McDermott plant that seed, or is it just something you and your teammates pick up from this new coaching staff?
Yes, I think it's Coach McDermott and his staff, and as well as just our veteran players setting the tone and letting all the younger guys know what's to be expected.
Because you've been around, you're going into your sixth year here now with the Bills. You know what it's been like. Obviously, every team you've been on wanted to win, but how do you think it is different? What is the approach? How does it change from what you've been around through your first 5 years with the Bills?
I think guys are more being treated more accountable, and we're doing a big job, better job of just having a clear focus and direction of what we want to do, and everybody's following that one plan, and we're not doing too much of just all types of stuff. It's pretty clear.
That's one thing for the coaches to relay their message down to everybody. But what about the leaders in the locker room in terms of how this is the way we're going to practice, this is the way we're going to meet, different things like that? Because there's been so much talk about leadership in the locker room, and last year there was lack of leadership in the locker room. Do you see anything different this year?
We've got the same as far as like the offensive line. We got like Eric Wood. He's more a vocal leader, mm-hmm. and he's going to vocalize it. And then we have Richie, and he's more of a lead by example guy. So, just from the O-line standpoint, I think we do a good job of in that direction of just just knowing what our plan is and just going out there with the right approach every day and being professionals.
In studio with Cordy Glenn, Bills left tackle, you have a new coaching staff, and it includes a veteran offensive line coach in Juan Castillo. What's your early impressions of him?
Oh, man, I like Coach Castillo a lot. He's a hard worker, and he expects the best out of you. And he doesn't really sugarcoat it. He just tells you straight up how he wants you to be. And I really respect that. He pushes us, man, and I can see like that's taking us a long way from already being a pretty good offensive line, and then you having a coach like that to not just come in and just be like, oh, y'all are good, so whatever. He's pushing us. He wants us to be the best that we can possibly be. So I really respect that.
When I first met him, when he first got hired, I was working out in the weight room. He was in there, and he started to tell us, from when he first met me, he started to tell me, his whole life story.
Yeah.
And he seems like the type of guy who he's a good coach, a good teacher, but also a good mentor and a guy that likes to talk to you about your personal life and things like that.
Right, outside of football, you can just have a conversation with him. And then on the field, it's all business. It's a nice balance. He's a great guy.
I've said this a couple of times. He was here as a minority coaching fellow. It was at Fredonia, so it had to be 15, 20 years ago. And he made an impression. I remember him. Some they have these coaches on the sidelines during camp, and you're like, hey, whatever. He made an impression on me that stuck with me 20-some years. He's a pretty impressive guy.
Yeah, he was telling us, he started, I think it was 1992 as an intern here, and now he's back. So that was pretty cool to hear that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The one other thing I noticed about Coach Castillo, and if you watch a little bit of practice, you can see the attention to detail. He kind of breaks down to everything down to little tiny steps sometimes and hand placement, huh?
Yeah, I think he breaks everything down, but at the same time, he does a good job of just making it simple for your linemen. So it's not so much thinking because we already have a lot on our plates. But I think he does a really good job of just making you understand it from the simplest point and not having to think about so much and just going out there and playing fast.
Cordy, I was at the I came out here and watched the rookies over the weekend, and a lot of people focused on one of the second-rounders, Deion Dawkins. You've seen him now for a couple of workouts here in OTAs. Any early thoughts on Deion Dawkins?
Oh, yeah. I've been watching him out there because I haven't really been practicing. But, I think he's got a lot of talent. He's got really, really nice feet. Right now, he just got here, so he's just figuring it out, and he's just taking in coaches, coaching, and he's just working.
Now, he was a guy who played basketball when he was younger, and I know a lot of linemen that played basketball. They, a lot of them, they want the ball in football games. just give me a catch or something like that. So you think you could take him in a one-on-one?
Definitely.
Definitely. Did you play basketball?
Yeah, I played a little basketball too.
Okay.
Yeah,
so you guys got that in common.
When you say he's got really quick feet, how does that help an offensive lineman? Like somebody who might not, you know, most people don't, even, you know, most people don't watch offensive linemen, Cordy. Right. You know that. what does quick feet do for an offensive lineman?
I don't know. I think just from the standpoint that most defensive linemen have quick feet too, and sometimes, you know, having quick feet, sometimes when you get in trouble, to kind of save you and bail you out sometimes. Yeah. And it just, I mean, he's got quick feet. Yeah.
Now, he has quick feet. Does it also help in, I guess, like reach blocks? And what about this system, this zone type of system where you have to kind of be on the move a little bit, right? Does the quick feet help out in that?
Yeah, definitely. Just having quick feet and just being able to move and being able to run certain type of schemes like wide zone or getting out in space, or anything, so it definitely helps.
Has the scheme changed a lot from what you can tell, what you've done the last couple of years to what Coach Castillo wants you guys to do this year?
Yes, like, I mean, every time you have a new online coach, it's going to be little tweaks and here and there, but at the same time, things that we were good at, we're not focusing on as much, mm-hmm. and things that we weren't good at, we were focusing on, and we're trying to clean those things up.
What's it like now, 6 years into the league, where you've been doing things a certain way, and then a coach comes in and says, I want you to change your hand placement here, but you've been so comfortable in doing something a certain way. Are you just open to change like that, or can you even say to him, like, Coach, I've been doing it this way for a long time?
I think it's a good balance, as far as just, like communicating and saying, oh, well, I've been doing this way, but at the same time understanding that it could actually be something that could help you out and make you a better player too. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a good balance when it comes to that.
Corey, you guys, as an offensive line, have accomplished quite a bit over the last couple of years, number one rushing attack for 2 years running. How important is it to continue that, and what other goals do you think your group as a unit have set for 2017?
We pride ourselves, man. Our goal is we want to be the best. We want to be the best in the NFL, so we pride ourselves on doing the little things and coming to work every day and, and giving our best effort and trying to help this team out and do our part.
How far away is this team from playoff contention? I know Coach McDermott doesn't shy away from playoffs, does he?
That's the goal. Right now, it's about taking it one day at a time and getting better and, like I said, focusing on the fundamentals and techniques and all the small little detail things. And we're just going to keep doing that, and we'll strive to be in the playoffs.
All right, sounds good. Cordy, thanks. I'm glad we finally got you in here.
No problem.
Thanks. Cordy Glenn, Bills left tackle, offensive lineman, joining us in studio. It is the John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts. Our Twitter poll is up, and we continue to solicit your input if you'd like. You can vote at John Murphy Show. Want to talk to you a little bit about the topic, too, on the board. It's the Bills offseason. What has gone well? What do you think is the most impressive thing about Buffalo's offseason so far? On our Twitter poll, most of you think the hiring of head coach Sean McDermott and general manager Brandon Bean ranks number one. 48% of you say the McDermott and Bean hires are number one. 41% say the acquisition of a first-round pick for next year's draft is next best. 9% say the restructuring of Tyrod Taylor's contract. 2% say something else. Let us know what you think. The phone line's open, 803-0550, and toll-free 1-888-550-2550 or via Twitter. Cordy, as he mentioned, Donald is not completely back yet, not able to practice yet. But, I think he is a critical part of what they do up front on the offensive line. And to have that group essentially together for another year has to be worth something, I would think, right? Even if the scheme changes, even if, a couple of things change around him, you're looking at an offensive line that's been together for a couple of years. That's big.
Here's the thing, and we keep saying, you win football games in the trenches. You truly win football games in the trenches, and you especially win them when you run the ball as good as you do, especially here in Buffalo. And so to have the same starting offensive line for the most part, we don't know who's going to be the right tackle, but to have all of these guys back together, oh, and by the way, you have your backup in Ryan Groy, who stepped in, and we know he can play across the offensive line. That's great for this team. That's great for Tyrod Taylor and his trust in the offensive line. I think that is huge for quarterback play. They need to be able to trust that I can keep my eyes down the field. I don't have to take my eyes off the receivers and look at the line because I feel like somebody's going to give up something in the pass protection. So, you know, it's a great thing for Shady as well. You know, as a running back in pass pro or even running the ball, he knows how these guys block, how these guys set up their blocks. And then in pass pro, he knows the same thing. You know, they've been working together for a couple of years now. So it's always good to have your offensive and defensive lines together, the same unit for a long time. We talk about continuity all the way at the top with the coach and the GM and everybody at the top of the organization. But you need that in your line play as well because, I mean, it's important. You win games in the trenches.
I think, as I said, I mentioned it when I came in on Monday, it would be great if Dawkins could be a starter. And probably it would be a right tackle.
Yeah.
But if Deion Dawkins could walk in and plug into a right tackle, it, first of all, it would make the draft great. Secondly, I think it could be the setup for a long career there. I mean, the guy's got talent. Corey talked about his quick feet. I mentioned to you how athletic he was and handling some of the quicker pass rushers. Again, just in the rookie workouts over the weekend, but I think he could be a real gem if that pans out.
Yeah, he can definitely be a real gem. And I expect him to have some growing pains, you know, to step in, and you're playing against, I don't care if it's left or right tackle. These days, teams have bookends. They have a good, you know, end that can rush on the right side and a good defensive end or outside linebacker on the left side. So you have to be good on both sides of the ball. These guys will have some growing pains, but if he can step in and be a starter right away and really grow with this offensive line and stay in the lineup and not get injured, things like that, it'd be huge for his development and it'd be huge for this team moving forward.
Cordy called him, described him as having quick feet. That is such an offensive line thing to say. You know what I mean? Yeah. You wouldn't notice. I mean, maybe would you notice that?
Big guy. I wouldn't.
Well, Monday I said to you, you asked what I thought of what I saw over the weekend, and I mentioned Deion Dawkins.
Yeah.
But I couldn't verbalize and say, oh, he's got quick feet. I don't know what I said. He looks like a really good athlete.
I can't see the quick feet until you, like, see him out in space.
Right.
You know, and make a block on, like, a DB or something that's trying to run around him, and he takes him, just wipes him out. You can't really see it until you see that. Because the offensive line, quite frankly, we don't pay attention to the offensive line until something bad happens.
Until something breaks down.
Right, exactly. Like, they give up a sack. Exactly. Yeah. You know, so I guess those guys can see it because they watch that stuff. I mean, I can see a receiver that has crazy quick feet. I can see that a DB, like, man, his feet are quick. The offensive line, their feet just look slow to me, regardless if they have quick feet or not.
They're all slow.
Right.
Donald says they're all slow.
So we'll see once he gets out in space and has to make blocks.
Hey, what's the best move the Bills made this offseason? Want to hear about that from you. The phone line's open at 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550 or via Twitter. Call here from Ed in Lancaster. Ed, go ahead. You're on the air with us.
Hi, Murph.
Hi.
Hope you guys are doing good.
How you doing?
Good, good. Got a couple of comments. In case any employment agencies are watching the show, I got a couple of part-time jobs.
Okay.
One guy from the ESPN, I think he'd qualify as a great speed reader. And also the other guy that was just on the phone.
Bill Barnwell?
Yeah, Barnwell. Yeah, that's the guy. And also, Cordy Glenn, he might qualify as a sumo wrestler.
Okay.
Okay. He's a big boy.
He is a big boy.
There's a lot of problems with this team. And one guy called in the other day from Lockport, and the biggest thing with him was, like, you know, he just, I don't know, he just, like, mentioned the fact that there's an awful lot of, there's some games that we could have won last year, okay? But the big things were the penalties, all the junk stuff, okay, after the whistle, okay? You know, and just, I don't know. It's like, I think it cost them some games.
Okay, thanks, Ed. Let's take a call from Dave in Rochester. Hi, Dave, welcome. You're on the air.
Hey, John, how are you?
Great. Thank you.
Hey, I just want to point out that I think the best thing the Bills did is got Tyrod Taylor on the team. And I just feel that he's a lot better quarterback than most people are giving him credit for. And if you look back at all the Super Bowl quarterbacks that have just made the Super Bowl, Tyrod Taylor's a lot better than a lot of them. I mean, you go back to the Hostetler who beat the Bills, the Washington Redskins quarterback, the quarterback that got the Bears to the Super Bowl and the Colts beat them. You know, he needs a little better team around him and a little better receivers. I think he's going to do just great.
Okay, thanks. I like it's not so much in Tyrod. The Tyrod option is one of our Twitter poll options. Mm-hmm. Tyrod Taylor, the restructuring his contract. It's not so much that Tyrod is back for me as far as great offseason moves. It's the way he is back.
Right.
The fact that he does have a manageable contract that gives the Bills incredible flexibility at the end of this season. Had they, again, and I mentioned it to Bill Barnwell, 6 months ago, Donald, 5.5 months ago, we're talking about what are they going to do about Tyrod. They either have to pay him under that contract or let him go. And if they let him go, that means a total rebuild and they're tearing down the whole thing. And if they pay him, they're probably paying him too much. It turns out there was a third way, and they found the third way to restructure his contract, to maintain the flexibility they had, to get Tyrod to agree to a restructuring. As Barnwell pointed out, that was big too. That's why I think that belongs up there in consideration of some of the best offseason moves for the Bills. They have a quarterback that they know they can win with. They have a quarterback they know that has room to grow and room to get better, no question about that. And they have the flexibility to get out of that quarterback at the end of this year if they want to. So they didn't have to go to a total rebuild and a total teardown in order to get better.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the other guys that were signed, and Mike Glennon, McCown down in New York City, down with the Jets. I mean, none of these guys were better than Tyrod. I mean, I think, like you said, the way that they were able to get him to restructure that deal, leading up to that, I mean, it was, we kept saying, like, there's no way he's going to restructure his contract.
Why would he take a pay cut?
Why would he take a pay cut?
Those words came out of my mouth.
Yeah, mine too. And so he ended up taking a pay cut, you know? And so it just goes to show that he feels like he can lead this team to the playoffs, and he wants to prove it. And he's okay with signing another prove-it deal. You know, go ahead, put the pressure on me. I'm going to prove it to you, to all of the fans, to everybody across the country that I am a starting quarterback in this league.
Yeah, I think it was maybe not the best offseason move, but one of the best, which is why it is in our Twitter poll. And we'd like to hear from you. What do you think are the best offseason moves made by the Bills? We got phone lines open at 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. We will revisit that when we return. We will also we'll talk a little bit about fake news, real news when we return, and maybe a little news about the Bills personnel department also. So come on back for that. The John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts, live today at One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back, John Murphy. Donald Jones, live from One Bills Drive, the John Murphy Show, here until 3 o'clock. A little bit of news in the personnel department. Brandon Bean continuing to get it done, Donald. They hired a new director of pro personnel, the announcement just moments ago. Malik Boyd has been named the Buffalo Bills' new director of pro personnel. That announcement coming down just a second ago. Who is Malik Boyd? Well, he's been in the NFL for 16 years. He takes over the pro personnel department, 14 years of NFL scouting experience. He came into the league as a defensive back, actually, when he first got going. Played defensive back in the NFL for the Vikings, the Saints, then played in Canada for 1 year. Started his scouting career in 2003 with the Indianapolis Colts and spent a couple of years with the Indianapolis Colts, 2003 through 05, and then went to the Cardinals in 2005 as an area scout, spent 4 years doing that, 5 years as a regional scout for the Arizona Cardinals, West Region scout for a couple of years, and he's been the assistant director of pro scouting for the Arizona Cardinals for the last 3 years. Malik Boyd is the Bills' new director of pro personnel. Brandon Bean made the announcement, talked about it, issued a statement moments ago. He said, Malik Boyd was my number one choice, the first guy I targeted. I appreciate Steve Keim for letting him come over here and interview. It was very kind of him because he was under contract. Malik is talented. He won an award in 2014, the Fritz Pollard Scout of the Year Award. They just don't throw those out. He earned it. He's going to be a great influence on our pro staff. He has a high ceiling. Yeah, 2014, he was the NFC winner from the Fritz Pollard Scouting Alliance as the Scout of the Year. So that's That's pretty good background, pretty good resume for Malik Boyd, the Bills' new director of pro personnel. Brandon Bean's been on the job for, what, 5 days? Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday? 6 days, I guess, if you count today. And is already, you know, starting to fill out his staff with the hiring today. Of course, hired Joe Shane over the weekend to be assistant GM. And Gain over yesterday. Was that Sunday? It was Sunday. Hired Gain to be VP of personnel and now director of pro personnel for the Bills, Malik Boyd.
I think it's – he also said that he's had experience in college and pro. He's a former player, so, you know, he's cut his teeth in college originally. Good versatility. That word comes back, versatility. And he started underneath Bill Polian and those guys is what he said. So if that resonates here with Bills fans, when you hear the name Bill Polian and him coming up underneath Bill Polian, that's a plus. I think, you know, the fact that he played is a good thing. The fact that he's done both college and pro is a good thing. I think you need to be able to notice talent and be able to project that talent, whether it's a college guy or whether it's a pro guy coming from a different team, or a guy who's been out there on the streets, you know, like a Mike Gillisley, a guy who can turn in to be a good player for you and you might end up getting compensation for him or something like that, you know, or he could just be a star for you moving forward. So, you know, it sounds like a good hire to me.
Malik Boyd, the Bills' new director of pro personnel, the announcement coming down today. We've been talking a lot today about the Buffalo Bills offseason. What's been the best move so far? You can weigh in our Twitter poll or give us a call at 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Jonathan and Alden has some thoughts on that. Jonathan, what do you think?
Hey, John. Hey, Donald. I think the best move was drafting Nathan Peterman as the quarterback. I mean, I like the idea of just going for a quarterback late every year. I mean, look at Tom Brady and Dak Prescott. They're quarterbacks picked late, and with that thing to know, they turn the franchise around. It's like picking a lottery ticket. You never know.
Yeah, you never know. A lot of love for Nathan Peterman, Donald, ever since the draft. I mean, he did last until the fifth round in the draft, until the final day of the draft. But we'll see. I think he's got a lot to like. He was singled out yesterday on our show. Brandon Bean talked about how he kind of has done what they expected when they brought him in here so far in a couple of practices.
You know, he's accurate. He's played in Pittsburgh, so you know he can play in some elements. He doesn't have the strongest arm, but he was able to get it done down there. So, you know he knows what he's doing. You also hear that leadership quality about him as well, and I think that's big in a quarterback. And we'll see. We'll see how it pans out once we get into training camp. We'll really all be able to see him.
Time for the part of the show we call fake news, real news, in an effort to poke fun at some of the fake news out there. Getting pretty serious with real fake news, though, Donald. I was thinking about this. No, I was. I was thinking last night, maybe we ought to stop having fun with the concept of fake news.
Think so?
I'm a little worried. I'm not talking about football. I'm talking about that there's some fake news out there that is a bit disturbing, and there seems to be no end of it.
Oh, no. It's not. It just keeps
coming
every day. So
here we are making fun of fake news, real news. I don't know. Maybe it's not worth laughing. We'll do it today.
Yeah.
Fake news, real news. The Las Vegas franchise, the Raiders, going to move there in when? A year or two? The Las Vegas franchise will fizzle, will fold, will backfire. Who said that? I didn't say that. You know who said that? Mark Cuban, the owner of the NBA Dallas Mavericks, the guy who a couple of years ago went after the NFL for greediness, saying, pigs get fat, hogs get slaughtered, and the NFL's getting hoggy. Well, now Mark Cuban was asked about the move of the Raiders to Las Vegas. He says the move will backfire. The quote from Mark Cuban, there's just no good reason. It's no disrespect to Las Vegas. It's a great city and it's vibrant, but they're going to a smaller market. It's transient, and it's just another example of chasing every last dollar, and that tends to backfire. Mark Cuban says the Raiders move to Las Vegas will backfire. Fake or real, I say fake, Mark Cuban. I like Mark Cuban. I like his fresh approach. But look, the NFL has thought this through. They've done the studies. There's no way the Raiders move will backfire, not in Las Vegas, to be sure.
Yeah, I'll say fake, too. And I respect them as a billionaire and a businessman. And, you know, I'm sure he's probably done studies of his own. You know, he owns a basketball team, so I'm sure he pays attention to different things like this. But, you know, ultimately I think that fans will end up traveling to Vegas from all different cities, regardless if Bills fans play the Raiders out there. Bills fans are going to go out there. It'll be good for that city. And they're going to start to have a lot of events in Vegas, Super Bowls and you know, just different things for the league. So I think ultimately it'd be okay. So I'm going to say fake.
You know the concept of too big to fail? I think that applies here with the NFL and with the Raiders move. Yeah. I really do. It's not going to backfire.
There have been so many different occasions where, you know, Roger Goodell and the league have made mistakes on different things. And ultimately, even the thought process of like, man, they're changing rules and they're doing different things. Is that going to say or is that going to cause the viewers to say, you know what, I don't even want to watch football anymore? But every year, even though there was talk of the ratings going down last year, people still love football, you know, and it's just people are going to travel to Vegas to see football games. It's just I don't think it's going to backfire.
Fake news, real news. This one deals with the Houston Texans. They have Deshaun Watson in the fold now. Fake news, real news. Deshaun Watson, first draft pick for the Houston Texans. The franchise savior? Is Deshaun Watson the franchise savior? Fake or real? I say that's fake.
Yeah.
Adam Schein of NFL.com says Watson will be the starter sooner rather than later. He said Deshaun Watson was drafted to be the man. I think he's probably a pretty good quarterback. If he does turn out to be the savior, it's probably a couple of years down the road. But, no, I don't think Deshaun Watson will be the savior of the Houston Texans franchise. Donald, your thoughts?
I'm going to go fake on this as well. I don't think he's the savior, and I don't think he's the savior because, you know, you have a team that's been in the playoffs. Right, so we're not talking about a team that, even though their record is like average, they're still getting in the playoffs. They are in the playoffs. They have a very good defense. They have good weapons on offense, and I think, you know, Tom Savage right now, they're kind of, you know, happy with Tom Savage as their quarterback. Now, Deshaun Watson will step in at some point and be the franchise quarterback. I don't expect that to happen this year, but I look at it from the simple fact of they are a playoff team right now, you know, so I don't think he can be the savior. We're not talking about a team that didn't win any games last year.
They don't need a savior.
Right.
Finally, in fake news, real news, the Indianapolis Colts have the best defense in football. Who said that? I didn't say that. You know who did? Jonathan Hankins, who went from the free agent market, went from the New York Giants to the Indianapolis Colts. His quote on NFL Good Morning Football, Jonathan Hankins said, quote, right now I feel like we probably have the best defense in the AFC. We got to go out there and prove it. We got a great quarterback, blah, blah, blah. The Colts were 30th in defense last year. Colts with the best defense in the AFC? Fake, fake. Fake, 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 fake.
Fake, 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 fake. I'm going to go fake on this one as well. I mean, look, I respect as a player on a team, yeah, I want all my guys next to me, if I'm on that team, to say, you know what, we have the best offense. We have the best defense in the league. And I want us to really believe that. But I don't know if he really believes that. I think he just said it because he was in the media and he wants to whatever. You can't just come out here and say you have – they don't even have the best defense in the AFC South.
You're right.
So, I mean, you know, just go fake on that one.
Fake. So much fake news. It's discouraging.
It is. It is. And it's not just sports. But it seems like it's becoming more prominent in sports as well. A lot of fake news.
Fake news brought to you by Yancey's Fancy – New York's Artisan Cheese. Back to wrap things up in a moment. The John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
This is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
And now, what have we learned from today's show?
That's a good question. What did we learn? Presented by Advanced Alarm, providing Western New York's homes and businesses with the finest in security and home theater, the preferred alarm and home theater provider of the Buffalo Bills. Learned a lot. I feel like I've learned a lot about the Bills and the NFL today. Bill Barnwell joined us from ESPN, and he has given off-season grades for each team in the NFL, including the AFC East. He gave the Bills and the Patriots the top grades in the AFC East. They each got Bs. And Bill Barnwell talked about his offseason grade for the Buffalo Bills.
You think about the Bills offseason, the most prominent offseason they have, the one where you say, okay, well, they accomplished their most goals. That would have been the Mario Williams offseason. I don't know if that really turned out all that well in hindsight. So I think a lot of things the Bills did weren't quite as obvious. They didn't sign the biggest free agent. They lost a free agent, obviously, to the Patriots. That's a little bit crushing in terms of some ways. But in terms of what they did, in terms of cleaning house, it seemed like it was kind of overdue. In terms of getting an extra first-round pick in next year's draft by trading down, getting extra draft assets, I think that was pretty successful. I gave them a B, and I think some of that could depend on what happens with the
Sammy Watkins situation, some other things. But I think there's a lot of reasons to be hopeful about what the Bills did over the last few months.
Bill Barnwell from ESPN.com. Cordy Glenn joined us earlier this hour. The Bills left tackle just off the field from the offseason conditioning program today. And he talked about the new coaching staff in place here at One Bills Drive.
It's a lot of different just from the aspect. It's just I think Coach McDermott is like he's really detailed. Mm-hmm. And I think he's helping us become really detailed and worrying about the small things, you know, just focusing on your technique, just your fundamentals, how you carry yourself when you walk around the building, just all the little small things that sometimes you might just forget about or not really think about.
Cordy Glenn in studio with us a couple of minutes ago. That's what we have learned from today's show. We had a pretty vigorous Twitter poll and a lot of discussion about the Bills' offseason. A lot of it generated by what Bill Barnwell had to say, giving the Bills a B for their offseason moves. And we asked you what has been the best offseason move for the Bills so far. 48% of you voted that it was the hiring of Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean. McDermott, the head coach, Bean, the general manager. Followed closely, really, 41% say the trade down to get an extra first-round pick last year. 41% say that was the best move. Tyrod's restructured contract, 9% of you say that was the best move. 2% say something else. We do have time if you want to phone in and explain your vote or explain your thoughts on that. You can do that at 803-0550 or toll-free 1-888-550-2550. I wonder if those who feel like the acquisition of the extra first-rounder next year, Donald, I wonder if those people who have given up on the 2017 season.
That could be true. I don't know.
Let's face it. There are
some people that say we should tank.
Yeah, and they have no place on this show.
Right.
We have no quarter for those who look for a tank.
Yeah, you guys should just tank so you can get the first
pick. Take your tank talk and get out of here.
For me, I want the team to win this year, and I think for that reason, that's why I said the whole Tyrod Taylor situation, because I feel like in terms of Coach McDermott and Brandon Bean, that still has to play out. You know, things have been said the right way, like I said earlier. They're saying all the right things. It seems like they're making the right decisions. But we can't see until we get into season. I feel like bringing Tyrod Taylor back gives guys on this team some sense of, you know, we're going to win this thing. It's not like we're in a full rebuild type of situation. And I think Tyrod Taylor is going to prove it the way they brought him back, like we talked about. The contract that they gave him gives them some flexibility if he's not good this year. And it also allows them to say, you know what, we can go ahead and draft one next year if we need to draft one in the first round. And we can also bring back Tyrod as well. You know, so I just think bringing Tyrod Taylor back just gives everybody that sense of comfort that they want to try to win this year.
I think also, I would vote for the hiring of McDermott and Bean. And really, the staff continues to be fleshed out even as recently as a half hour ago. But I think because of the long-term implications mm-hmm. of putting those two in place, letting them build out their staff. I mean, let's face it, Brandon Bean has an entire personnel department to put together. I think that makes that the most significant offseason move, getting those two in place and empowering them to build their staff, coaching staff mm-hmm. and personnel staff. And then, of course, the next big thing is to let them go. You know?
Yeah, I mean, they definitely let them go. And they don't really inherit anything.
Right.
You know, Coach McDermott comes in here with a quarterback who's on a prove-it deal still. Brandon Bean comes in here with a quarterback who's on a prove-it deal and two first-round draft picks next year, you know. So they get a chance and a clean slate in terms of scouts. So they get a chance to really just build this thing the way they want to build it. Hopefully they are here long enough to
yes.
build it the right way.
That's the key. Keep them around 5 or more years if mm-hmm. you can. As we mentioned, news today in the last half hour, the Bills have hired their new director of pro personnel, Brandon Bean, making the announcement, the hiring of Malik Boyd. He is the Bills' new director of pro personnel. Brandon Bean said he was the number one choice. Boyd has had 14 years of scouting experience, 12 years with the Arizona Cardinals, the last three as the assistant director of pro scouting for the Arizona Cardinals. Before that, worked on the college side with the Cardinals in scouting, Western Regional Scout for 6 years, an area scout when he first joined. And as Donald pointed out, he broke into the league as a scout with Bill Polian's Indianapolis Colts back mm-hmm. in 2003. So a little experience on the college side, much of the recent years on the pro scouting side, played a little bit in the league as well, 94-95 with the Minnesota Vikings, 1 year with the Saints, one season in the Canadian Football League. He was the NFC Scout of the Year in 2014, as voted on by the Fritz Pollard Alliance. And Malik Boyd is the Bills' new director of pro personnel. a week ago, I mean, Brandon Boyd was announced last Tuesday. I think just about a week ago, you and I, you in particular.
Is it Brandon Bean?
Or Brandon Bean, mm-hmm. Yeah. Brandon Bean was hired a week ago. You were worried. They got to get the scouting staff together. They got to get a pro scout in here right away.
Right.
There it is, six days later.
And we kept saying, like, I mean, who's out there right now? You know, who needs a job? All of the guys that they've hired, they've kind of taken away from other teams, you know, and teams have actually granted and let the Bills interview these guys and things like that. But, man, I think they're doing a good job of doing whatever they have to do to get these guys over from their previous franchises.
If there are moves to make in pro personnel, and there might be, I mean, I think we share the opinion that there needs to be some more influx of talent at the linebacker spot, inside linebacker spot.
Yeah.
So maybe there's time to do that. I mean, you know, it's going to be slim pickings, you know, out there as far as the talent available, but maybe Malik Boyd has some answers at weak side linebacker here.
I would think all of the guys that they're hiring right now, they've been out there on the streets because they've been working for Miami, Houston, and, you know, until they got the call to come here. So they know what's out there, who's out there as a free agent, at what positions. So, yeah, if there's moves to be made, I would think that, you know, everybody's on the phones now. Like, listen, we need to make this happen, and what do we have to do to get you over here?
Hey, you know what we never talked about? And I did want to mention it. I don't know how much there is to say, but yesterday the league announced that it is expanding its officiating partnership with the Canadian Football League. Six NFL officials, there were four last year, going to work as part of CFL crews during preseason and regular season games in June and July. A little bit more development. Anything that goes towards development of officiating, professionalization of officiating, I'm all for, Donald. So I really like that.
So the NFL officials are going to work in Canada?
Yep, for June and July preseason and some regular season games.
That's a totally different game. Does that help?
Yeah, but still, get them on the field, enforce rules.
Yeah.
You know, the one rule they got to get is use replay on pass interference.
Yeah.
You know, I wouldn't mind if they brought that over.
Mind that either.
I think that's the way to go.
Yeah.
They're also going to attend the CFL officials, six of them, will join the NFL's officiating development program, attend mini camps and training camps, get involved in some preseason games. So, good move. Hey, we want to thank our presenting sponsor, Napa Auto Parts. Find your local Napa store online at NapaOnline.com. Our intercom board op today is Brayton Wilson. Production assistants from J.J. Torito, George Blast, Jeff Koltnick, Thomas Hollander, James Donovan, Jay Harris, our producer. We're back tomorrow at noon. Reggie Ragland's going to be with us tomorrow, the John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio. Jeff, you got to throw that ball.